Recorded live.
Welcome, brothers. Welcome to another episode of the Virtual Talk Show for Men, produced by the Head of Household. My name is Rodney, and I'm your gracious host for the evening, broadcasting live from the great state of Florida. The Virtual Talk Show for Men always presents the hottest topics for discussion, and tonight is no different. Tonight's topic is, are you keeping score? A very heavy topic tonight. As always, the one rule we have is no cursing. Please feel free to comment at any time during the show, but you know, try to keep your comments as brief as possible to give other guys an opportunity to speak. And I will say that I'm currently holding the two highest trump cards in the deck, both the big and little jokers that I will drop in the 10 o'clock hour, so try to hang in there with me until then. But I'm going to start it off like this with a story that my father told me many years ago. And it was about an old farmer who sent for a mail order bride. And when she arrived, he took his old mule and wagon into town, picked up his new bride, married her, and headed on home. And on the way home, the mule stumbled, and the old man said, "That's one." A few miles down the road, the old mule stumbled again, and the old man said, "That's two." They continued on home, and just before they got to the farm, the old mule stumbled again. The old man got out of his wagon, picked up his rifle, and shot the old mule dead. Okay. His new bride screamed, and she said, "Now, that was an awful thing to do." And the old man turned to his new bride and said, "That's one." Obviously, this old man was serious about keeping score.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I want to know is that, you know, it's in y'all's situation, y'all's relationship, first question of the evening, are you keeping score in your relationship? And by that, I mean, is it you or is it your lady that has that "what have you done for me lately" attitude? Are you keeping score?
Keeping score. Now, keeping score can mean a lot of things, but can it?
Absolutely. Yeah, what's your definition?
Well, you know, I count score of major arguments.
Okay.
So, out of the 10, I'm going to win at least two. I'll lose the rest of them, but two of them, I am most definitely, I'm going to the end. I'm going to fight these arguments until the end.
Okay.
So that's my way of keeping. Sometimes I used to call them marriage breakers.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to have to fight to the end to win an argument with a woman. That's just a known fact.
Anybody else want to jump in on that? Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So anybody else want to chime in on that? Are you keeping score in your relationship?
I think we all keep score.
Go ahead.
I think we all keep score. I think that, and we don't intend to keep score because some people can say that's petty. But in actuality, it may not be. And let me tell you what I mean.
Right.
Just like you say, let's just say you take a teenager, for instance, and your teenager wants you to take them to the mall, take them to the movies, all that kind of stuff. And in return, you're saying, okay, well, you got to clean your room, you got to get good grades, blah, blah, blah. They have a list of things they have to do. And if they're not fulfilling their responsibilities, then we may say, well, you know what? Since you're not fulfilling yours, I'm not going to fulfill mine. I think in a marriage, that rolls over into a marriage as well. And we may not call it keeping score, but in actuality, it's kind of the same thing. Because if you're saying to your wife, okay, I need you to do this, I need you to do that, blah, 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 and it's not getting done, then you may cut back on some of the things that she wants you to do. So it could be tit for tat. It could be like, well, and then the argument may come about, and then you say, well, last week I did X, Y, Z. Then they may say, well, this week I did X, Y, Z. You see what I'm saying? That's keeping score.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we do it without even realizing that we're doing it, but we do it.
Good words.
Yeah, I can honestly say that I know I'm keeping score. And for whatever reason, I do it probably purposefully. You know, I don't necessarily call it keeping score, but what I do say is that whenever my wife says something that I feel is just completely crazy, and I try to explain it to her, and she doesn't get it for whatever reason, then I just make a mental note to say, okay, the next time when she does that to me, I'm going to say the exact same words back to her that she just said to me now about this situation, so that she can experience this and recognize what I was saying. Because a good example is, like a while back, it was something that she hadn't done in a while, and I complimented her, and I said, wow, you look nice, that looks great. And then I followed it up by saying, you know, why haven't you been doing that? She flew off the handle thinking that I got to follow every positive up with a negative. And it's not really just providing her with something great and just leaving it at that. I got to follow up with something negative. So I was saying to her, I was like, do you know how many times you say to me, you know, that was nice, dear. You know, it'd be great if you did that more often. Why don't you do that more often? But she wasn't hearing it. She just could not hear it for whatever reason. So I've got a mental note right now for the next time that happens, I'm finna pull that out. And I'm gonna use those exact words. Man, wow, that was positive. But why do you have to follow it up with a negative? You just turned it into a negative statement. Mm-hmm. And I know that I purposely do those things because, for me, it's just unfortunate sometimes I can't have a discussion with her and get her to just basically see that some of the stuff that she's talking about or asking about or her references is just ridiculous. So I just save it up, hold on to it, and then I just show her how ridiculous it is. Because 9 times out of 10, she's going to say it to me in some capacity. And it's not that, you know, she does it all the time. But in those instances where I just can't get my point across, I'm going to make sure that I make my point known.
Interesting. So you're keeping track of the hurts your wife is inflicting on you or the relationship?
Pretty much. I mean, because like I've always said on this call, I mean, I take everything personally. I'm going to try to talk to you about it. But when you, for whatever reason, can't follow the talking or can't have a dialogue or discussion with me about it, and you just want to fly off the handle, and I know I'm right.
Okay.
Then I'm just going to bring it back. I mean, that's pretty much it. I'm just going to show it to you in another light.
Okay. All right. Good words. Anybody else want to get in on that? Are you keeping score? Will you admit to keeping score in your relationship? Okay.
There was something he said. He said something in there that I believe women do.
Okay.
And they take a mental, what was it, mental thought? Is that what you said? You keep that?
Yeah, I keep a mental note. I got a mental
a
note
mental
of it. I got
note,
it.
Man, I'm trying to tell you.
And that was about to roll into my next topic, my next, you know, item, and I'll let you continue on, P-Town, is do men and women keep score differently?
I believe we do because, you know, we might get mad and we'll let stuff go. And we're done with it. After we may say, I'm sorry, we're done with it. But somehow women, wives may bring it back 4 months later. Something that happens and be like, oh, in the middle of an argument, just throw up something and be like, oh, where'd that come from? Where did this left hook come from? And why is this being brought up now? I mean, you know.
Let me break it down for y'all that, you know, how men and women definitely keep score differently. And I'll give y'all a prime example because, you know, one of the biggest reasons that couples fight is because they don't realize that they keep score differently, you know, than their partner. So, you know, it's like when a man wants to score big points, he goes all out and does something extravagant. You know, maybe buys a diamond necklace, takes on a 3-day weekend vacation or whatever. That's because that's how we keep score. Big actions earn more points than the small actions, you know, in a man's mind. And when we do this, we mistakenly think that we don't have to do anything else for a while because we scored such big points. But on the flip side, in a woman's mind, every action is worth the same number of points regardless of size. So that's like little things like leaving your notes in your lunch, doing your dirty laundry, picking up your favorite movie on the way home from work, or just to call you to say that she loves you. I mean, this is how women keep score because she believes that she's racking up major points with you when she does a lot of these little things. And that's the same reason why she gets upset and feels like you don't appreciate all the things that she does. it's not your fault, fellas. You know, it's not that you don't appreciate it. It's just that we keep score differently.
But you know what, though? I would actually challenge that a little bit, because I know with regards to my situation, the roles are reversed. My wife liked to hit home runs and think that that's great and that should last and sustain me for a long time. Whereas I'm taking notice of all the things from day to day, the small things and all that, all the stuff that you just said. Now, I don't know if a lot of that stems from the fact that I'm coming from a single-parent home. I was raised by just my mother. I'm an only child. So pretty much everything that I've acquired has been like my mom. So it's mom-like. It's woman-like. So I think a lot of my tendencies and things that I have are along those lines. But I know that my wife, for a fact, I mean, she tries to hit home runs and be like, all right, well, you know, this one thing is supposed to last him for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or whatever, and we'll reference back to that one thing. And I can honestly say, I don't keep tabs like that. I keep tabs on the little things. Did you push the chair in? Is the coat hanging back where it's supposed to be? Are your shoes back in the closet where they're supposed to be? Is the mail read and sorted out? You know, basic things from day to day. You know, like I'm on my way home now from being at the jail all day. So when I get in, that's what probably going to be, unfortunately, it's probably going to be the first thing. Is the mail inside? Have we gone through the mail? Have we sorted that mail? Am I going to come in and find shoes by the door, or the shoes going to be where they're supposed to be? You know, and I might not say anything, but I'm taking notes.
You keep your score.
So the very first time that something comes up about, well, you didn't hang your coat up. You didn't hang it up. Okay. Well, last Thursday through all the way to the following Thursday, you know, I came in and mail was just on the table racking up. You know, so I can honestly say that it is the type of thing that it depends. I mean, you handle it differently.
So in your case, you're keeping track of the small things.
All day. Because the small things, to me, make big things. I don't need big things. Just small things that make the big things.
Does anybody want to disagree with that?
I wouldn't want to disagree with what he's saying, because that's how he feels. But that would be a heck of a way to have to live with somebody. I mean, that would be really, really something. I'm just imagining, you know, having to live with somebody like that. You know, you'd be walking on eggshells wondering if you know, anything you did was sufficient. I mean, that's how he feels. I can't debate that.
But do you think that women in general should focus on doing the big thing for her man, like getting tickets to the big game, and women and men should focus on doing the small things on a regular basis?
You know, I think for me in my marriage, and you know, you all know I've been married, you know, and divorced and been down the road and all those kind of things a couple times. What I have found from my perspective, generally, don't sweat the small stuff.
Okay.
Step number one. And number two, it's all small stuff. If it's not going to matter in 100 years, it's really not that big a deal. Because 5 years from now, it's not going to matter. You know, I went through that, you know, with my kids, and I was so hard on them, everything they did and that kind of thing. And you know, at the end of the day, whether they got a B or an A, you know, in math in 8th or 9th or 10th grade, isn't the big deal. It's how you make them feel about who they are. That's really it's what you leave in them. And when you constantly nitpick and tear people down, you leave such bitterness in them that, you know, it's detrimental to a relationship. That's what I've found.
But aren't you
dealing with certain standards if you don't sweat the small stuff? I mean, you know, if you come down, you know, I guess what I'm saying here is when you say don't sweat the small stuff, I don't think you don't sweat the small stuff not all the time, but there are some times where you got to say, hey, come on.
If you live with a trifling person and they don't, you know, believe in cleaning themselves or what or the house, I guess that's different. But you know,
sometimes things have to be dealt with. I don't mean that things don't have to be dealt with. Let's just say, you know, somebody's responsibility is to make sure the bills are paid, and the bills aren't being, you know, I don't mean that as not as small stuff. I mean, you know, things have to be dealt with, and if somebody can't deal with certain things, maybe she shouldn't be paying the bills, and maybe those are things that need to be delegated elsewhere. But what I found in my marriage, in my experience with marriage, is that most of the time, if you're launching bombs, the bombs are going to come back at you one way or another. Even if you're, and this gentleman sounds like he's in a superior position in the marriage, even if you're in the dominant position in the marriage and you run the show, quote unquote, she's going to find ways to pay you back, and that's what it's going to start tit for tat.
So what y'all are saying is that, do you think the habit of keeping score can be actually detrimental to your relationship? I mean, should you not keep a running tally of the wins and losses in the negotiation between you and your wife?
It's not just detrimental. It's going to be destructive in the marriage. And God doesn't keep record of us. When He forgives us, that's it. It's back again. And when you step up and sweep it under the rug, ammunition in the next battle, month or whatever, I mean, that's just going to be,
I hear exactly what you're saying, and I mean, I try to definitely take that approach to it, and I guess I have tried that, but some people just don't deal well with the fact that, you know, at different points, you know, I've been in a situation where it's been, you know, you're trying to have a logical, calm conversation. And basically what happens is, well, give me examples. What are you talking about? Okay. Well, before, when I wasn't keeping examples and I was being godlike and just trying to turn the cheek, you know, I had no resources. I didn't have anything to back up my statement, so therefore it just got brushed to the side. And I was losing. I was losing ground. So what became of it was, okay, this isn't going to be malicious. I'm not trying to do anything that's going to be detrimental to our marriage. It's just that you need examples, because you don't believe that you are doing this, or this isn't happening, or this is occurring. So let me bring 4 or 5 examples from 6 or 7 months. Let me just do that, you know. And it's not necessarily that I'm trying to, you know, tear you down, but you got to be, my mama told me this, be careful what you ask for. And I'm good at keeping examples. I'm good at keeping things. I'm meticulous. My job is detail-oriented. That's what I do. So when you ask me for an example, I'm going to bust you in your face with it. And you can't be bent out of shape with it, because that's what you asked for. You asked for the examples. So I don't know how it can be detrimental. And I guess that's also the flip side of it is, I hear what you're saying, because those are some of the conversations that I've had. Was, oh, I feel like you treat me like a child. Oh, I feel like this is negative. It's not positive, blah, blah, blah. But how can I be wrong both ways?
Mm.
And to try to find a happy medium, what is there? I mean, especially when you walk away thinking that you never said it this way, you didn't do it that way, that's not what you did, that's not what happened. You know, I can't even make a statement or whatever before you try to flip it and make it something that is not. So it's like, you know what? I'm not even going to deal with that. I'm just going to give you the example. I'm just going to give you the example, and I'm going to remember the details of it, what hand you were using, what door you came in. I'm going to remember it just so that shuts everything up, because that's a great equalizer, facts. Facts
yeah.
Crush feelings and emotions and everything else. I'm going to give you facts.
Can I ask you a question? Did you know this about the person that you married before you married them?
No, No, I did not. And the thing about it is I can say, and I want to say this, fellas, I'm hot right now talking about it, because it's one of those buttons. But it doesn't happen all the time. It's just that when it does happen, it's just so extreme. And I guess that I'm at a point where I'm just tired of my one thing becomes a big blow up when there's like 37 things you're doing or not doing. And it's like, you make my one thing, I let the toilet seat up, and you fucking, I'm sorry, forgive me, you fell in the toilet in the middle of the night, but there's been many times that I come back home from being away at work, and you forgot to lock the door to the house.
Mm.
I mean, wow. I mean, you talking about a toilet seat versus the door to the house being locked? The lawn not yet? All that stuff is in there. You know what I'm saying? And you worried about a toilet seat? or you left and we witnessed a family member have a house fire from leaving the dryer on when they left, and the house burned down because they didn't have the vent cleaned out. And I've talked to you about, hey, let's not leave the dryer going when we leave, because I don't want our house to burn down. I want you to be safe. I want everything to be here. I want us to be able to come back to a home. Yes, we have insurance, and things will be all right as long as everybody's stuff is okay, but I'd really like us to play prevent. Why I'm still coming home and the dryer's on. It's gone. You know what I'm saying? It's stuff like that. Why I'm just like that? You getting on me about a toilet seat? Come on, man. I mean, I guess that's why I'm fired up about it, because it's like, wow, you know, the things that you've been out of shape with me about are so small. They're so small.
But let me jump in here. Let me drop the 9:30 monkey wrench, because it's about that time.
Oh, man.
When did the contest, quote unquote, officially begin? You know, when did it start? Because when y'all first met, I'm sure you wasn't arguing about the, you know, y'all wouldn't argue about the toilet seat. It was all lovey-dovey, all in your, you know, in each other's faces and all that good stuff. So when did it change? That's what I want to know, fella. When did it change where it's like, oh, you left that dry on again, strike one? You know, when did that start?
Rodney, can I comment one thing?
Go ahead.
What he was talking about, you know, I think, you know, a lot of things do have to be dealt with, but I think it's how they're being dealt with and how they're being said. If you have to deal with something, you know, if you're coming at it in an accusatory type of tone, somebody's going to get defensive, you know, and I don't know if that's just where the relationships go, but it's really the way you speak about it, and I'm hearing the tone that this gentleman's using, and I know that if somebody came at me that way, I don't care how right they are, we're going to be fighting. I mean, you walk in with your dukes up ready to swing. I mean, so it's not always, you know, not saying anything about, because, I mean, obviously there's things that have to be discussed and dealt with. The way it's dealt with, you know, is really a situation that can be really detrimental. I mean, even if something has to be done, if somebody, you know, does something that, you know, that has to be dealt with, and some things do, the way we approach and deal with the person, if we deal with them with respect and honor, then they don't feel like we're speaking to a child.
But see, I think you're a good point of that, and I'm glad we're having it. I was excited about this topic. A good point about that, and what Rodney just brought out, was when did it get to that point?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't just start out like this, okay? I started coming with the calm and the nice, and it wasn't a condescending voice, and it wasn't aggressive. Dear, you left. I came home today. The house was unlocked. You know, by any chance, did you forget the lockdown? Don't worry about it. I'm just glad that you're safe and blah, 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 blah. But when it's multiple times and you're a grown-up, then I got to put a little extra bass in the voice. Just a little bit. You know, because it's like, because what happens is the fact that, you know, one, like I said earlier, you know, before, you know, when I was just talking to you, you deflected it because I didn't have no examples. So it's like, I didn't come with any malice. I didn't come with any of that originally. But you asked for examples. And then, you know, I'm talking calm, and I've dealt with everything underneath the sun. You know, and it just seems like at this point, you know, it ultimately, it doesn't matter what I'm saying. It's the fact I'm saying anything sometimes. And I know that it's gotten to this point, but ultimately, I didn't take it here. I did not bring it here, you know. And it's one of those things where I have responded and probably have reacted, which is not the positive way of doing it, based off of what's been delivered to me. I mean, if you're not a little kid, when you say to me as my wife, honey, my memory is horrible, I really need to write more notes, and I need to do things, then do it. then do it, right? Then do it. Because here's the thing. I watch you write notes, leave notes, put reminders, write on calendars for stuff that's important to you that you want to do. So stuff that's relevant and important for both of us, or more importantly, our family and our child, like locking a house up, why wouldn't you write a note? why wouldn't you write a note? So be bigger than yourself. Think about, you know what, even if you don't care about me, your husband, care about our baby. So that when I come home from picking our child up and I will turn the corner, it's not some dudes in there waiting to get me or to snuff me or do something to me, right? So, I mean, just write a note. And that's why I got this. So when you're saying, yeah, we would be ready to fight if you would bring it to me that way, well, I'm bringing it to you this way because I'm exhausted. Mm. I can't be everywhere. So I think, to answer your question, Rodney, when did the score start? It started when I got exhausted. I don't remember the exact moment. I don't remember the exact time. But it's one of these things where when I've had enough, I can't be everywhere to help you. You know what I'm saying? And I guess the point of this and the reason why you keep score, it comes down to this for me. You know, I just feel like in some aspects, I don't have anybody watching out safety-wise for me. I just don't. I don't know what to expect and what not to expect, when she's going to show up and when she's not going to show up, when she's going to follow through and when she's not going to follow through. I have to be on it, everything, and that's exhausting.
So do you think a lot of that is because of your protective nature that you have, you know, because of the kind of job that you have?
Because my
No. I agree with him 100%. Because when my house isn't locked, I hit the roof.
Yes!
Just like him. I hit the roof. You want to make, I can have the best day in the world. Let me come home and the front door don't have a lock on it. And all the women are in. I hit the roof, man.
Yes.
That's unacceptable to me.
It's like right now, fellas, I'm sitting in the garage, and I don't know if I go to turn the key, the door, and the door could be open right now. I have no idea. But that's what I got to have my mind ready for. I got to be ready for the fact that I could go in and anybody could have just walked in. And then I'll walk around, walk upstairs. She'll be all upstairs, and I just walk in. So tell me when I'm supposed to feel like if I walk in, and it's not that. It's more of, I guess this is the key. It's more of a fear. I'm afraid. I'm not really angry. I mean, I'm upset that she's not following through and I got to keep scoring some things, but I'm afraid. It goes back to simple things like a bill not getting paid because you're not opening mail. So if I'm gone on the conference for a week and a half or so, and you home, and you're not opening mail and something's got to be sent off, and then I come back and we missed the deadline because you just kept piling the mail up. I mean, what in the world? These are mature adult tasks. I don't mean to jeopardize the call. I'm going to be quiet.
No, you too,
hey,
bro.
Rodney.
Go ahead.
Rodney, this is Mark, man. Hey, I want to say I definitely feel you guys on some of the comments. It's real life situations. And when you come home and your house is unprotected, you know, you're going to feel some kind of way about it. I think what we probably need to work on, and myself included, is the fact that just because our wives are doing some things that we don't agree with, we got to take the scorekeeping out of it. So let's come up with solutions, let's discuss the problems, let's work on this, you know, but let's take the scorekeeping out of it, because when we're keeping score regarding to these things, you know, it makes us always think back to, you know, those 3, 4, 5 other times she left the door locked. But let's kind of move past the scorekeeping on it, and let's try to come up with some solutions, because, you know, and it's easier said than done. It really is.
Yeah,
but I think
yeah.
the whole point of the call, and, you know, as I think about my own situation with regards to a lot of things being said, I think things are always better when you just come in with a fresh perspective and not always leaning back on what you always do. And you know, let's just deal with this specific situation. Let's come up with a solution.
But what is your solution?
The solution, man, I mean, you know, where you start, is, you know, we're helpers for our spouses. They're our helpers, we're their helpers. So let's help them, you know what I'm saying? You said your wife writes notes. I'm not sure if it's the gentleman that just made the comment, But, you know, Ramonda, did she write that note? Give her a call in the middle of the day. We got cell phones.
Yeah.
You know, you coming home, you know, whatever it may be, you know, help that person to that point, you know, without a condescending tone. And again, I'm saying this because I've done the same thing. It's real life. And sometimes, you know, you approach it in that manner. But, you know, when I think back on how I should have probably acted, you know, it's probably better just to work as a team. And, okay, well, you can't remember to keep this note. What's gonna help you do that? Let's find that out. And let me try to help you out, you know. And that's the starting point. And then the solution is going to be different for every couple.
And those are good words, too, man. Those are really good words to live by. And even if we do mentally keep note, because we're going to mentally keep note. I mean, it is what it is, and they are too. But to bring it up in the heat of an argument is really not the thing either, because that's a bad trend to start in your marriage, because it's something that may not be able to get resolved. You may not be able to let go of that, because then it'll just be a part of the foundation of your marriage, where it's always a tit for tat. Well, I did this and I did that, and last week, you know, I took out the trash and I cut the grass every week, and then, well, I wash your clothes. That is not healthy.
And
you know,
Tony, go ahead. I just want to tie into to what you're saying right there, and you know, to ask another question is, you know, are men the biggest scorekeepers or are women?
I think it depends on the household, because I'm definitely probably the biggest one, and that's by default. Like I said, I gotta bring examples. I can't just come with, hey, you know, can we do this? Well, what are you talking about? Give me an example. And bam, then when you ask for examples and you're bringing that, then you created the position of me of example giver / scorekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's honestly what it is, and I'm not trying to do that, but she has yet to give me something else to say, yeah, I believe you. You know what? You're right. I did. You know what? I do have a tendency not to remember. You know what? I did make a suggestion that I need to do better with the notes, so let me do that. That doesn't happen. What happens is, well, you got to give me an example. Okay. But where, and then when I give the examples, then I'm by default the scorekeeper, because the example is a score. It's a score.
Is your wife originally from this area?
What's that?
Is your wife originally from this area?
No, she's from the Caribbean.
Yeah, I mean, and the reason I'm asking that is because a lot of different places, lifestyle, you know, the way they did things, or the, you know, when it came to closing doors and locking things, you know, it may not have been something they were accustomed to doing back then. And sometimes the whole half got hard.
That's a great point. Do they do that in the Caribbean? Do they leave the doors unlocked?
Well, I'm not even going to go to the Caribbean with. I'm just going to think about her household. She's the youngest, and she literally has had to do much of nothing. I'm going to be honest with you.
The point we're trying to make is maybe that was not something that she was made to do. It wasn't something that was placed on her plate. So
she didn't have to be responsible. Yeah.
And so what I'm saying is you gotta understand the person and where they are, and then you have to deal with them in a manner in which, you know, there's understanding to a degree, and then hopefully that your message come across without malice, you know, because if malice is involved or you know, or your tone is a high tone of voice is involved, it's never going to change a situation. It's always going to intensify.
Yeah, and I have to agree with that. I have to agree with that because I'm from North Carolina, and I can guarantee you right now my mama's door is open.
It's right. The car doors are open, too. Yeah.
And the car doors is probably open. I'm in the car.
I was in Mississippi, and I was in Cleveland, Mississippi, working. And when I went to the store, I seen the people get out of their car. They left the car running, and they went shopping. It blew my mind, man. I was just too through, because I'm a city boy, right? That car would have been gone.
But that's you think people respect your stuff, so you know, you grew up just knocking on the screen door and sticking your face in like, hey, I'm home. And walk on in. That's it.
I hear you, man, but I'm inclined to agree with Peyton, man. I mean, all the way. And I understand it's where you're from. I grew up in New York, Manhattan, so I know all about locking doors with 3 or 4 bolts and the sliding joints. You slide up under the door. We know all about that. You see what I'm saying? But it's our responsibility to protect our family. the man.
Yeah.
And if our wife is the enemy, and when I say the enemy, if our wife is the irresponsible one in doing that, you see what I'm saying? That's what makes us even that much more upset. Because,
right.
if, you know, I'm supposed to protect this house, and you being negligent.
Yeah.
Right? So I got to come in the house, and
the
thieves are
in
the house sitting there with you drinking coffee. Now I got to fend them off. You see what I'm saying?
Because
you let them in.
So how would you feel if you try to change your protective nature of how you are,
I hear where you're going with that. I hear where you're going with that. I hear where you're going with that, because that's the one she tries to say with me all the time. Is I'm talking about it. Here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. This is the honest truth when I look at it. The way that I do things keeps us safe. Bottom line. There is no great equalizer. Let's turn the tables. You know, okay. It's like the way that I do things. It's not crazy. It's safe. You know, it's safe pee. You know, it's not. You know, hey, we're just out here carefree, living it up. You know, just live life. And
that's the
stupid response that I get sometimes. Remember, well, just live life. You gotta learn how to relax. Relax. You got my babies in the house at 9 o'clock at night, and I just walked in, and you walked all the way upstairs.
Can I interject one thing? I just want to ask you something. I don't know your name, but how is the tactics that you're doing? How's that working for you?
Well, it has its good days and bad days. It probably has more bad days than good. But the fact of it is at least my point is no. I, you know what? And I just got to at least go with that, because at some point I'm hoping. And you know what? I've even taken other tactics where I don't say nothing. I just write the notes for her. But do you know what I get from that? You're treating me like I'm a child. You're not allowing me to do this. So it's like, I guess the frustration that I have is that there is no happy medium. There is no way for us to come to the table. What it has to be is I just got to not say nothing and just let her do whatever she wants to do and just be happy with it. But that's safe for me.
But that's not it at all, and that's not a possibility. There's things you have to do. A gentleman made a great comment. And he said, you know, going to her and saying, you know, what can I, obviously this is very important to me, so what can I do to help you? Okay. What can I do? Can I call you at 6 o'clock? What can I do? I'll take the responsibility, because it's really important to me for you to be safe and our children to be safe. Okay, so what I do to help you. I know this is an area of weakness for you, and it's something that I just can't brush aside. So what can I do? I can't be there to lock the doors or pick up the shoes or whatever issues they are. What could I do to help make this a situation that would be easier? Because I don't want to treat you like a child.
Fellas,
I don't want to be married to a child.
Fellas, as sure as I'm black, I've done that, and I've done it calm. And I've done it, and you know what she says to me, and I guess this is literally where my frustration comes in, is because when I try to help her with things, it's almost like she's so frustrated with the fact that she doesn't do these things on her own, that any assistance, anything, even for me, her mom, whoever you may want it to be, it's just not met well, because it's not something that she's thought through. And she's told me this in our moments of being calm and crying and sincere and all this with each other, even though we're sincere all the time. She's told me this. I just feel like I'm letting you down. And I get that, but you can't beat me up everywhere. I've literally done that. And if I send a text message or I call in the middle of the day, I just wanted to remind you, blah, blah, blah. I'm not stupid. I can remember things. Did you think I was going to forget it? And 9 times out of 10, she probably has forgot it, but she's going to play the card like she didn't forget it. And I've done it.
Yeah, well, I'll say this, brother. That is, you know, maybe you're only keeping track of every time when expectations are not met. And that's why she's, you know, coming back at you, you know, because you're keeping track of only the negatives and not too many positives. So, you know,
I got to stop you there again. I make sure that I thank her, and I make sure that I reference it and say, you know, I've noticed that over the past, because this is the thing. We're on this call. These are conversations that not only I've had with you all on this call, but I've had with my minister, with a couple of close friends, and even my mother, and even her mother about this stuff, okay? So I've been trying to figure, and I've been getting these, a lot of things that you guys are saying. I'm glad to hear it because it's positive reinforcement of things that I've heard from multiple sources. But I've been doing it. That's why I'm saying I'm exhausted because it's like at the end of the night, I can't just go. You know what? I can't even just fall asleep in the day, take a nap. You know, because I don't know if she just walk out at the door at the house unlocked. I can come out tomorrow morning, the garage is left wide open, you know, cars unlocked. I can, you know, I can't tell you many times I say, hey dear, don't leave anything valuable on the seats of the car because you're giving somebody an opportunity to say, oh, snap, break the window and snatch it and run, but I'll come out and in the car is the laptop, a camera, an iPod, and all the just on the seats. And I'm just like, wow, you know, I mean, you got to help me out here, but I've done it.
Won't you try to steal it? Won't you, you know.
I've done that, too, but you know what? And you know what happened? When she found out, of course, that backfired on me because then I'm really treating her like a child. I'm trying to bring her tough love and blah, 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 because eventually I had to give it back. You know,
so
Peyton,
so in your household, you would say that you're the biggest scorekeeper, but I'm here to, I think that women are bigger scorekeepers, and I say that because it's something that happened in 1999 that I still get referenced frequently, brother, and I'm just like, what in the world? That was in 1999, the year we were married. You know, this is almost 11 years later. Can we drop that? Why do we need to bring that up anymore? And, you know, that's what I mean. Are men, you know, Peyton is obviously the biggest scorekeeper in his household, but generally speaking, are women bigger scorekeepers?
Wow.
Y'all don't think so? Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
Well, I would definitely say that. I've seen that in my life. And I mean, I can't remember what happened last. They're bringing stuff 6 years ago.
I'm with you on that, Andrew.
Yeah.
What I had for lunch, and you hit me with what you did last month.
Oh, man.
I think it's a horrible thing, and I know we all do it. I think it's a horrible, and when I say horrible, detrimental to a marriage, that whole scorekeeping thing. You know what I mean? Because sometimes you just got to let go. Because if you're in a position where, you know, you're supposed to grow, we're supposed to grow. On this call, we get on here because we want to grow. We want to be better. You know what I mean? And how can we grow if we're keeping score? How can we get past the issues if we still harboring these issues, this stuff that they did back in 1999 or whatever the case, you can't grow because you can't get past it.
Yeah.
And so it hurts us in too many different areas. But we still do.
I agree with the one brother that said that women are more of a scorekeeper. They're more of the emotional being, and they're the ones that hold on to things for long periods of time and always bring things back from their remembrance from years ago or even when they were affected by somebody previously, they were in a relationship before you, and when something that you do reminds you of that person, you know, even though she may not bring it up to you, but those things come to her mind, and in her mind, she's still keeping score, and just you by his action.
I think that's because women take things more personally than men do generally.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the emotionally more than men do on most parts, and they get affected personally, where a lot of times men, you know, look at things and kind of brush it off.
Absolutely. 100% right.
I got a monkey wrench. Is it too early?
No, it's not. Go ahead, brother.
I got a monkey wrench because we're talking about keeping score, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Do we keep score sexually?
Uh-oh.
In a marriage?
Damn right.
In a marriage.
I mean, is it fair to ask that question?
Yeah,
is it fair to ask that question? Do we keep score sexually?
I do.
Do we talk about the things that we used to get before we was married, and the things that we no longer get now that we're married? Because that's
keeping score. Keep it in the back of our head.
Oh, we keep it in the back, and we still waiting around for that to be fulfilled, right? I mean,
yep.
You know, I mean,
that's right.
It is what it is. We still don't know why it stopped, so we keeping score. They may be keeping score, too.
Yeah. Can somebody explain why it stopped? Has anybody ever figured that out?
Yes, life.
Like,
well, we came to the conclusion once.
That's not an excuse, but that's what it is.
Maybe somebody has talked about it with their wife and they figured it out. And I hope that person's on this call because you would help a lot of men out.
It was a setup. They never wanted to do it in the first place. That was just to get. But we keep a score. We keep it score.
Absolutely.
We keep in a tally. Like, okay,
absolutely.
Last month, you know what I mean? It was six times. This month,
we men definitely are the sexual scorekeepers. No doubt.
We keeping a chart. This not a this a chart, brother. It's a growth chart.
I got a 3 month
trend. There's no competition between a man and a woman in that area in terms of keeping score. We keep score.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It was for the last week.
90% of them that are keeping score that are not receiving the things at home that they want to have at home are 90% of the time are the ones that will actually go out and look for what it is they're not getting there.
Mm-hmm. Dude, we can pull a wife in the conference room, pull the chart down with a little laser beam, and start going over.
Oh, man.
You know, I didn't go that hard, but to be honest, New Year's Day, we had a conversation about last year and what I'm looking for, what we're expecting, or at least what I'm expecting for the next
2010.
I'll be honest, the lines of communication have got to be open. And I said, look, you know, and I didn't wait until the end of the year. You know, we had discussions a monthly, you know, or whenever I felt it necessary to discuss it. But definitely coming into the new year, I said, okay, you know, everybody's making their resolutions and stuff. I want to make sure I get mine out there. This is we're going to agree to this.
That's right. Yeah, it should go. That conversation should be an addendum to the bills. Like after you discuss the bills and say, okay, now we got to talk about this. This is the addendum. Let's get this out in the open, you know, and just put it out there.
The words, fellas.
Someone had said on a call, a previous call, some time ago, that hey, if you don't, which is it's a good word, but it's if you don't put it out there, how do you ever gonna know?
Exactly.
It might have been Rodney, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to articulate it. You got to communicate it. Mm-hmm. And you know, I would ask, you know, when it comes to you know, keeping score, you know, just to tie it back, you know, to what we're talking about tonight, is that, you know, do you feel, you know, like you're always making more sacrifices for the relationship? Or do you think your wife does?
I make the sacrifices in the area we just talked about.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. In that area,
right.
I mean, you're like, man, all right, I got to, you know. You know, why I ask that is because, I mean, is giving in and compromising, is that a sign of weakness? Or is it really okay to just like, all right, well, you know, I'm just not going to get any this week or whatever?
Mm.
I mean, that's deep.
Yeah.
Did you say this week?
Hmm?
I'm not going to get any this week.
Well, tonight. Tonight.
You said it this week. You said it this week. You said it already.
Hey, in some cases, that may be the case. That may be the case. But, I mean, you know, is that, you know, the compromising in that area, I mean, is that a sign of weakness? Or should we let her, you know, just, hey, it's good. I'm good this week.
You know, No,
there's no compromise.
No, you say I'm good?
No.
What are the compromise in that area?
One of the conversations my wife and I had was, what are we expecting sexually? And I think that's
right.
A real good conversation to have.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, because you're looking for 3 times a week, and you may be looking for 7 times a week, and you know, a brother going, damn, I would love to get it 3 times a week. So, you know, but I think there's a conversation that needs to be had between, you know, your spouse, because, you know, we all have needs, but we also have to respect, you know, what our partner is looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can't be gossiping.
Yeah, I do have to be reasonable. I think, you know, Tony said it best earlier, and I'm going to bring his comment back out. is that why are we afraid to admit that we're keeping score internally anyway?
I keep
score. You know you're doing it. You know, it's like, why are we afraid to admit that we're doing it? What's the problem?
It actually is a man's right.
No, I'm talking across the broad spectrum, across the whole, locking doors and, all that kind of stuff. And why are we afraid to admit that, yeah, I keep score? I mean, what's the issue? What's the whole thing?
Hey, you guys, like, y'all have it real good, man. For a long time, bro, I was only getting it, like, once and twice a month, man, okay?
Hey, bro.
Hey, I'm just being honest with you.
You want to hold that trump card, though. See, you always got to have something in your pocket just in case.
Hey, argument,
and then you got to have a trump card to bring out.
I thought I had more than trump cards, because many times, when I once or twice, man, I wanted to go out and hit something, but I didn't do it.
Yeah, that's real talk.
Be honest.
Hey, Rodney, man, one thing I found for myself in terms of why I can't really admit that I'm keeping score is that when I do keep score, I find a lot of times I'm keeping score compared to something outside of my home. So is it something that I used to do when I was single, or something that I used to have with another female before I was married, or something that I heard my boy had, you know what I mean? And when I score with regards to myself and my home, a lot of times it's like, well, dang, my man getting it, six, 7 times a week, and I'm only getting it twice. What's up with that? You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
And that is hard to admit for me, but, it's real. And the more I realize that, and the more I try to remind myself of that, like, hey, that's outside, and that's not what God has for you. God has something else for you here, and this is what you've been given and what he's blessed you with. So let's try to work from that perspective. Then I'm able to kind of get past the scorekeeping. But, man, a lot of times with the scorekeeping, man, it's just human nature. You're going to look at other things that seem better to you, whether it's something that you know of firsthand or not.
Yeah, it's the words.
Good words.
Good words.
Very true.
Good words.
And as a matter of fact,
the comparison.
I don't mean to keep jumping in on this, but, and now I'm totally blown away. Now check this scenario out. Now, for a long time, man, it was here and there. Then, starting to change. And then sometimes, this got worse. And then I'm going to tell you, for the last 2 weeks now, I've been getting these off-the-wall texts, man, stuff that make you just want to run home from work and leave now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest with you, I don't even know how they accept it.
You run home, though, right?
Get on your knees and thank God.
Yeah, I do, thank God, but it's just blowing me away. I'm like, whoa, and then when you get home, these things come to pass. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
I'm like, wow.
Wow. Wow.
So for a minute, man, I didn't know how to respond, how to react. I was like caught up, I'm like, what the hell? Excuse me.
Wow.
I'm being real with you. So, I mean, Texas, that
big amen to that.
Words that I've seen in the text that I've never even heard her say. And I'm like, what?
Saying is that she's taking all your energy. And that's why you're only bowling 400 series now.
Oh, man.
Go ahead.
I'm done.
Okay. I wanted to ask, when it comes to keeping score, is a relationship 50-50 on a daily basis?
There's no relationship that's 50-50.
No.
So that it's not going to be even every day, but if you average it out, over the course of your relationship, wouldn't you see that you had your fair share? I mean, I say, for example, in a case where, your wife is sick, she's got the flu. I mean, she can't do everything, whether it's around the house or, she can't do everything like she normally does. Well, you pick up the slack. Well, you should. You probably do. I'm sure you do. So, I mean, in that case, of course, it's not going to be even, on a daily basis. But if you look over the course
of your relationship, wouldn't you might find that actually this thing is, you know, evened out?
Nope.
No?
Nope.
Totally. Give me the word. Give me the word. Why not?
I mean, it's not. I don't think it's even out. I mean, because, you know, I think that we have legitimate complaints as men, married men. Let me say it that way. The complaints that we did not have prior to being married. You know what I mean? And I think that women get comfortable married when women, after they have their day, they feel as though, you know, they can, you know, certain things aren't that important to them anymore, and it's important to us. You know what I'm saying? So on the strength of that alone, it's not 50-50.
So you're saying that you just find yourself, you know, keeping score to be sure that you're getting your fair amount of, you know, attention. Because I agree that, you know, we all have needs and desires which we want met, taken seriously. You know, but
sure.
Is it all, you know, so that things are evened up? You know, if it's like you said, you know, it's not evened up in your case, you know, are you taking notes? Are you keeping score to make sure it stays as close to even as possible?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Who said everything had to be even anyway? I mean, is that the definition of marriage?
Well, if you want to be honest, I believe women always think that's the definition of marriage.
That's a definition of marriage.
That's in their rule book. That's in their definition of marriage. And it's shown up in the definition of the judge marriage.
Yeah, and they say relationships should be equal partnerships. So,
on who you asking that question. Are you asking somebody with a black coat on sit behind a bench, or are you asking two married folks? Because one thing I understand about 50-50 is I can't do what my wife do upstairs. Because right now she getting the kids bathed, in the bed, homework, you know, getting up, ironing clothes, getting prepared for tomorrow, signing homework books. You know, and I'm coming in, and that's already done. If I had to do it, it would take me about two times as I can get it done, but I couldn't get it done in an orderly fashion as she could, or as fast as she could, because I'm not used to doing that. I'm used to making sure the light's on, cutting the grass, outside stuff, you know.
So which
stuff works?
Just worth more. Which carries more weight? Cutting the grass, you paying the bills, or her taking care of the children? Which is worth more?
Well, I mean, it just depends on what are you talking about. They all work the same.
That's
it's
exactly
who does.
Saying, so how can we say this is more important, or this isn't equal, or this isn't even, instead of understanding, you know, it's kind of like we're all part of the same body. Is your head more important than your foot? You know, I mean, we're all part of the same team. And you know, sometimes we have different jobs, and sometimes we have to, you know, carry, you know, things that the other one can't do. But that doesn't make it, you know, that it has to be quote-unquote even or equal.
Mm.
If we,
you're right.
But I can't have a baby. You know, I can make a baby. I know how to practice to have a baby, but I can't make a baby.
Let me put this out there.
If you know, I can go and buy some Similac and feed the baby.
Hold on, Peter. Go ahead, somebody.
Go ahead, Rodney. So let me ask this question. If, let's just say, one of your brothers is moving. Now, you're moving your house. And you ask for my help, and I come over and help you. Who would that be? A 50-50 partnership, relationship, whatever, for that moment, that time that I'm coming over and I'm helping you move? Is that are we splitting the responsibility? Are we splitting the partnership? Splitting that house, I guess, in half of everything that you're moving.
Is that on both of us or is that on you? Does that make sense?
No, you recap the example.
Okay, so if you're moving, let's just say you're moving your house and you ask, can I come over and help? If I
I'm going to stop you right there. It's not 50-50 because you're not obligated to help me.
No, no, I got that, but I'm saying I'm going to come and help. So at that point, it's half the house up to me and half the house up to you, 50% of the work and 50% of the work, or how would you divide that up?
I would just the things I asked you to help me with. That's what you would help me with.
Okay,
so it wouldn't
so,
be 50% of the work. It would be if I asked you to, if you're helping me move, and if you come over to the house, I may only need you to help me move the sleep sofa, which weighs 8,000 pounds, and the freezer, which weighs 8,000 pounds. But you wouldn't be responsible for the rest of the things in my house. I mean, you're just helping me with those two items.
Okay. So let me wrap my head around this scripture here that would say that it's not good for man to be alone, so I'm creating for him a helpmate. So is it 50-50?
It's never 50-50. Okay, I'm just going to answer the question
because
I have to know the answer.
It's 100%
it's 50-50, man. I just can't see it.
Right, so that's where I'm kind of going with that. If she's the help, if she's designated as a helpmate, then is the responsibility really on me? And I have to kind of delegate certain things that I need help on, and they're there to help me out, whether it's the kids, like someone was saying, help with the kids or go grocery shopping or take on some other task, whatever it is. But ultimately, is the responsibility on me? I would say, and I think from what I'm hearing the consensus say, is that I'm pulling more than 50% as the head of the house.
And I want to piggyback on that, Rodney, just for, if I can. If we go into it, as it's my job to wash the clothes, it's my job to pay the bills, it's my job to vacuum the floor, my job to do everything, just take response as men, my job to do everything in the house and outside the house. And this may sound far-fetched. If we just say, okay, it's my job, I'm the head of this household, like the captain of the ship, I'm the head of this household, I got to do all these things, make sure the dishes are washed, blah, 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 blah. Then whatever the wife brings to the table is a plus. It's a plus at that point. You know what I'm saying? And we're grateful for whatever they bring us, and then there's no harm, no foul, because we expected to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. And you're already doing it.
Exactly.
More than likely, before you get into the marriage, you have a house or apartment or something, and you're taking care of all that anyway.
Anyway.
At least you should be. I don't know if you're cleaning your house or not before you got married.
You know, so that added pressure on them, we can save ourselves a lot of grief by saying, it's all right, I'm going to do it anyway. I know
most
that sounds crazy.
They're going to bust their butt to come up and do whatever they can because they see you're willing to do whatever it is.
Yeah. Right. That's it right there. And that's where that whole wives be submissive to your husband comes into play because they see all that you're willing to do, the 100% you're willing to put into it, and they feel drawn to do something, to help out somewhere, to contribute something to the relationship. Not because you forced them and you demanded on them, I need food on the table every day, I need my laundry done, I need my shirts ironed and this, that, but because they see you giving your 100% into the relationship, they feel obligated, they feel drawn to do it. Not because you made them, but because of all the love that you put into the relationship, they'll come up and they'll take care of the kids or go grocery shopping or what have you.
Let me throw a monkey wrench in that, though.
Go ahead.
She married a user, that works.
Yeah. Go ahead with the monkey wrench.
The monkey wrench is, what about in those situations where you are doing that 100%, thinking that this person would be like, wow, this person is really busting their hump to do things. Let me try to do my very best or definitely put in what I can. and you're thinking that's what's going to come about, but instead, you have the individual that gets kind of stalled out and saying, wow, I just can't do it to that level, so maybe I will do something, maybe I won't do something.
That would drive you crazy.
Yes, it will drive you crazy, because I think when we're, you know, when we're talking about this with the helper and all this stuff, where frustration can come in is when you are doing exactly what when you just read the definition or the piece from the scripture, the word, and you're giving 100% and you're expecting this person, and you're not demanding them or making them do anything. You're just hoping that they'll see that you're leading by example and you'll contribute where you can and try to get involved. But the frustration comes in is when you're giving 100%, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you got to still give and meet that person 50% on whatever little things they doing. That's crazy.
I think, you know, let me throw this out there, and I could be absolutely off base, so please correct me or someone let me know. But I think if that individual, that woman, is not willing to do anything, because that's what it kind of sounds like, if she's not willing to contribute anything in that relationship, that should have won, and it should be seen before you get married. That lazy woman right there cannot hide being that lazy, that she can't help out anything when you bust in your hump. Before you got married, I think you should have recognized, or somebody should have brought it to your attention or something, that this woman is extremely lazy. She don't want to do nothing.
Especially right. When you walk into her house and the cobwebs are everywhere.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you make a good point, and I think with this, it's not that it's blatantly that lazy, but it is to the point at some times where you're just like, wow, you know, I'm working extra hard over here doing the things that in life, everything that is written down says that a man should be doing in order to be the head of their household. And I'm just asking you to bring some things to the table with consistency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why am I having to half your quarter that you're putting in? You know what I mean? Like that's exhausting. You know what I'm saying?
Let me go back to my example. If you allow me to go back to the example of the house now, if Rodney's having me come over to his house to help move, and I say I'll come over and help, and he said, well, you know, I need you to do this couch over here. Help me lift this couch. And I'm over and say, well, I'm going to clean up this curio cabinet. I'm going to put these glasses away in this box. I don't want to let that. So at that point, is he angry at me? Is he upset at me? Does he have a right to be? Because I'm helping him out.
Mm.
Right, it's his house. It's his couch.
Right, but you're not helping me in the area that I brought you over to help me with. I mean, why are you here? I guess I needed to state that up front. Look, you're coming over to help me move X, Y, and Z. Don't dare try to put away some glasses.
That's my point.
Because that's not what I need you for.
That's my point right there. As funny as it may sound, that's my point right there, that when you're coming into that relationship, before you get married, these are some things that need to be addressed and saying, hey, not necessarily demanding, obviously, and telling them, but let's work out our roles on what we plan on doing, what we're not going to do, or, you know, and that boils down to even sex or what have you. Some of these conversations, granted, even if you have a conversation before you get married, the emotions and stuff still pulls you in the direction of getting married, and then you try to deal with them afterwards, which is the wrong way to do it, but nonetheless, we do it. Because we get drawn into whatever it is. But some of these conversations need to take place up front. Now, some of us are in a relationship. Most of us are in a relationship now that, you know, you just can't back out of now because it's done. Now you got to figure out a way to best handle that issue without driving each other mad.
Good words.
And somebody once told me that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And when
right.
we get to that point where we're banging our head up against the wall, she ain't getting it, then the marriage maintenance piece has to come into effect, and we say, okay, it's time to bring in a third party. Because if your wife is listening to you, that's what she knows. She's listening to you. She may say, yeah, whatever, you know what you're talking about. Maybe you do, maybe you don't, whatever the case may be. But whatever you're saying is definitely ineffective. So now that third party has to sit in and say, okay, and what are you doing?
and then what are you doing? And then this is how you feel about, and this is how you feel. So then she can hear from a neutral person will highlight the deficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
Then it's no longer you, and you repeat the same thing over and over again. Now you got help.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, they'll write down a schedule of exactly what you need to do the next week or the next week, and it's beneficial to you, and it saved you a whole lot of stress.
But sometimes
right.
they need to hear from a different person, you know, for
exactly.
for them to receive it, you know. And a lot of times, like you say, it's beneficial, you know, for them to hear the same words that you've been saying for months from a different person because, you know, then the realization hits, like, maybe he was right, you know. But it's not about right or wrong. I mean, well, it is in that case, but, I mean, it's not the, you know, I told you so. It's not that mentality, but it's like, hey, you know, I was trying to, you know, tell you and you just weren't receiving what I'm saying. But, you know, I want to move on because I'm about to drop the little joke on y'all, and I'm still holding the big joker for about 15 minutes or 20 minutes from now. But the little joke, I want to twist this up on y'all and just change the whole dynamic of what we're talking about and take it in another direction, if I may. And, you know, I want to ask, you know, can Keith's score actually keep your relationship happy and healthy? And let me expound on that, because the goal should be to earn as many and to lose as few points as possible, which I put in the email. And we all keep score. I mean, we all keep score. I mean, we can't help notice if our sweetheart wins more often than not. And that's because, fellas, we assess things and make decisions by quantifying. And to determine the car you're considering is worth the price, which house to buy, whether to buy a dog, move to another state, stay in a relationship. You always weigh the pros and cons. You calculate the pluses and the minuses. And in a relationship, points are being awarded and deducted all day long. I mean, Peyton, you know, he exhibited that. I mean, he gave excellent examples of that. I mean, say, you know, you have a day of nonstop meetings and, you know, your lady has lunch delivered at your office. That's 20 points. Lunch includes your favorite cheesecake. That's 10 points. You know, so I mean, your partner, your wife borrows your car and returns it with an empty tank, minus 10 points. Stopping for gas makes you late for a meet. That's a 20-point penalty. It's the fourth time this month, 50-point penalty. So, you know, I say that as examples. It's the kind of scorekeeping that we can't help but to do. You know, we give greater emotional weight to what most affects us. And, you know, I say that because here's a fine example. If it were otherwise, you know, the gift of a sports car to your wife would have the same point value as a book. Same point value, sports car and a book. So that don't even sound right. You know a sports car is worth so much more than a book. You know, the same thing like cheating on your wife would have the same point penalty as being late for dinner. Not true. It's not true. Y'all know it's not true. And the whole point is that, why I say this, let me close and I'll throw it out to y'all. Every lost point results in a wound to the relationship. I'll say that again. Every lost point results in a wound to the relationship. Acts of love, kindness, and support, they mitigate the damage, but it's the balance of pluses and minuses that determines the health of our relationships. You know, given that, I mean, it should be the goal to earn as many points and to lose as few points as possible. So, I mean, it's easy to start every day. You know, you should ask yourself, how can you make yourself, your sweetheart's day better, you know, when you wake up, you know, by calling her and reminding her to lock that front door. I mean, whatever. But, you know, I would say this, fellas, you know, can keeping score actually keep your relationship happy and healthy? That's the question. That's the little joker for the evening.
I like that, Rod.
That was great. I mean, you set that up nicely. But my response to it is, I don't know if keeping score can actually be a positive because you are learning the mechanism of keeping score, which means ultimately at some point you're going to reverse it and bring it the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I think that I don't necessarily know. It may work for a while. You may start out doing well, but what's going to happen is you'll think that you're doing it in a positive way by saying, well, wait a minute. You know, remember when I sent you lunch last week with your favorite cheesecake and then you got the massage and all that stuff, which are positive things that got you positive points. But if you don't get back what you think got you the points, then it's going to have a negative effect ultimately. It's going to go there and you're going to start saying, man, I know I've got about, I'm the all-time scoring high in this game. You know, I should have my initials off to the side of this by Miss Pac-Man because I'm eating all the time pellets
and you're
to everybody.
The Raptors.
Right. But it's like if you don't make it to the next level or the next board or you're not seeing it, the process of keeping the points and doing it is going to ultimately, if it doesn't, if the buy-in is not there and the other party doesn't fulfill, again, it goes back to what everyone said on the call. If we're not having a conversation as to what this game of positive points looks like and we're willing to always buy into it, then it's going to get reversed because you want to throw it out there. You're not going to mean to do it, but it's going to come out that way. And then it's going to be like, oh, you're keeping points on me? Well, no, I thought we were doing the positive game with the cheesecake and the bringing the gas and all this. I thought we were doing that, you know? And then this person just, for whatever reason, something came up, couldn't do it, didn't occur, whatever. And you've gotten in the habit of taking these points, and boom, before you know it, you're using it in the wrong light.
So what about this conversation
not,
right here? What about this conversation you're going to hear? Well, I remember when, and you're not doing the same thing that you used to do, to get me now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like my mama said, don't start nothing that you can't keep up. Don't
that's
do it.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
And that's what this game or the positive score would be. If you can't keep it up, if both parties can't keep it up, it's going to flip negative.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that it comes down to what heart are you doing this from?
Condition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you're doing something back, then you really aren't doing it out of the genuineness of your heart. You're doing it because you're selfish. Doing something out of the genuineness of your heart, it's not about what you're going to get back. It's because this is what you want to do in your heart. So we really need to examine, why are we doing things? Are we doing this so we can get that? Are we doing this because this is what we want to do?
Mm.
And it comes down to serving. It's like it's you know, when the collection plate comes around in church, are you giving so God can bless you? Are you giving because you want to do this? Where's your heart? You know,
and the whole thing, what you're talking about, Andrew, is that, you know, are you doing it to go for the goal? You know, are you just in the race? You know, are you doing it to make your wife happy, to, you know, as I say, you know, stop pretending you don't keep score. We keep score. But, you know, do it in a way that reminds you of the big and little ways in which you can show love to each other. You know, and that's what I'm trying to say. You know, and like Andrew's saying, don't do it so, you know, she can give you something tonight. You know, you should do it out of the love for your wife, period.
Human nature remembers the thing.
Go ahead.
It really is. You know, but do we get to a point that we go, okay, you know what, this is my responsibility to be the head of this house. Anything that you bring to the table is a blessing. I'm not doing this to expect you to do this or to do that. I'm willing to do it all. And I've never met a woman that if a man had that kind of attitude, they wouldn't bend over backwards to do what they could do. You know, and she may have to grip at a certain point, but I'm going to tell you what, she'll look around, she'll start talking to her friends, and she'll realize, you know what? What I have is a really good deal.
Mm-hmm.
Step it up, because he ain't going to be there forever doing this and me not doing jack.
Rodney, I think to answer your question in reference to keeping school, will it work? I think in a reverse psychology type way, and this may be, you know, not keeping score in reference to what you do, but keeping score in reference to what she does on a positive note.
Mm.
And always saying, hey, I like the way you did X, Y, Z. I noticed how you locked the door last night. I noticed how, you know what I'm saying, or whatever the case may be, but you're constantly highlighting the things that they did, keeping a positive tally. And you just keep reminding them of what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? And you may want to get at some point
you may want that to come back your way. I don't think that that's a selfish way, but, you know, I think that's a good way of starting a trend, is to just say, just highlight the things that they do, so then they'll be looking for that. So they may start doing the right things, because now they know that you're going to notice what. That's like we go to work and we bust our hump just so our supervisors can notice and say, yeah, I've seen you come in early. I've seen you put in the extra hours. I've seen you're a good team player. We want to be noticed for what we do. And I
Absolutely.
Think our wives want the same thing. And I think it's our responsibility, if we're going to keep score in that manner, so that it can only come back in a positive way.
So can you highlight her correction of you when she's right?
Hmm?
Can you highlight her correction of you when she's right?
When she's right?
When she's right? Highlight her correction of you when she's right. Well, I really appreciate that I was wrong, and I must admit that I was wrong, and I thank you for bringing that to my attention. I will do my best to change that.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that.
I don't see it. It's hard for a man to apologize, but yeah, I mean, you get to a point where if your relationship is strong, that you don't mind apologizing, saying my bad, you know, and I screwed up on this one.
But what he's saying is that, you know, you got that same praise when she locked the door, you got to say, hey, you know, thanks. I was out of line. You know, thank you for bringing it to my attention. I want to apologize.
That's what he's getting at, for sure.
That's keeping
the peace as well.
And that brings a different light to the whole situation, where it will not create, you know, dissension or a problem. You know what I mean?
And what Tony was talking about, I mean, come on, guys. I mean, everybody likes recognition. Everybody likes praise. Everybody likes appreciation. So, I mean, that little thank you for locking the door, that might go a long way. You know, she might remember the next time that when she walks out the door, let me lock this door, because I know, you know, I'm going to get some accolades, you know, for doing that.
Sure.
And
my husband
it
appreciates
may be as minor as that. Yeah, exactly.
He appreciates
my husband appreciates me.
And y'all make some good points with the positive reinforcement. I think the difficult part sometimes, though, is you got to start somewhere. I'm just gonna say that again. But it's hard to be thanking people for some basic things that you should be doing. I mean, I'm gonna be honest with you. It's just really hard to thank somebody for something that you're supposed to do, especially at this age that we are. Because if you're not doing it, I mean, it's just difficult. Now, I do the positive. I mean, when y'all were saying this, all I could do was smile, because in this whole process, I've done that. You know, I've tried to, you know, like I said, I talked to multiple people, and they've all co-signed a lot of the things that you all have said. So when I was doing dailies, and then it got to the point where I was like, you know what, I'm going to be writing until my hand breaks off, so I'm going to go ahead and just do this at the end of the week. So at the end of the week, I write a thank you note with all the things that she has done that she remembered, got done, finished up, put together, did for us, blah, blah, blah. Everything from locking the door when it does get remembered to taking care of our children to, you know, helping me get prepared for whatever presentation, you know. But where that has led in some aspects is, well, the conversation comes up later is, well, then you expect me to do this all the time? Well, wait a minute. I'm just trying to give positive reinforcement, and that's why I said I was sitting there smiling, because I love the fact that we're having these conversations, and maybe I'm just going through it on this call, and this is my time to really have this difficult
this
topic.
This is especially for
but
you, brother. I knew when I wrote it, I was like, this is for
but
you.
It's like, I've done that. I've done
but
it,
I think,
and I just feel
I
like
think,
what happens is it just all gets flipped.
Yeah, I think that you obviously have to go about it a different way.
Yeah, man, every way y'all have said on here, haven't I pretty much said, yep, I've done that?
But
so
obviously
none of those things
work. You got to find another avenue, brother.
You're just going to have to go to Lowe's and buy that combination lock that every time you go out.
Every time you go out, they got the combination lock.
And you just use the little combo number to get anything out.
Exactly. Yeah, say that. Which is locked on your way out. And you know what, fellas, and he says that
is,
to be joking, you know, that might actually work.
But I'm actually being serious about it, because there's sometimes that, you know, you gotta. It's like we don't take this the wrong way. I'm just putting an example out there. Is that in order to get somebody to realize you're not supposed to go in the cabinets, like when a child, when you tell you say don't open the cabinets, you put a child lock on there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Until they realize it. So in order for you, so you won't have to argue and it won't be a situation and you don't have to worry about being points on it anymore, is why not just go
buy
a door
that locks. Yeah.
That locks behind it, but make sure you give her the combination key so if she can get locked out and the kids in the house, she can get in the house without any problem.
But at least you know that every time that door closes, it's locked. You ain't got
to
worry about locking it or unlocking it. It's always locked. Yeah, it's always locked.
But then it comes down to, am I bringing you fish or am I teaching you how to fish? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Because then it becomes, what am I teaching? Because children got to learn the concept of keys and how that works. I can't have them growing up in life and saying, well, this door is not like the door at our house where we punch a code. That's not every door. what type of world is that?
Use the key, but it's just the point of, is that point of all right, I'm gonna handle the situation by, I'm always talking, I'm the man of the house and I'm talking about security. I'm make sure that if the door's open, I got the charm lock on, so everybody, you know, when the door opens, the alarm charms. You know, it chips. It chips every time the door opens, so you know who's in the house, if somebody's coming in or not. Making sure that, all right, if you're in the house, I bought this alarm, I need you to have the alarm on so that, and that way she has to have the door shut. Because if you're requesting to have the alarm on for safety, you don't have to worry about it because the door has to be shut.
Patrice, I think we're taking it too far. And Peyton just brought up a perfect example. Are we taking them, are we feeding them or teaching them how to fish, something like that?
Yeah.
Sade had this song when she was back making music a long time ago. And it said,
she's making music now.
Yeah, she's
making
still making
music now, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it says, I love you like a child.
Mm.
Now, that's very, very powerful. And the reason why I'm saying this is because we love our children. Men, we love our daughters, we love our sons, right?
Mm-hmm.
We will teach them until they get it.
Mm-hmm.
We will teach our kids until they get it. And if they don't get it, and even if they do get it, we're going to teach them some more. That's just how we are. We want to make sure that they're equipped to go out in the world, right? But when you get married, now catch this, when you get married, the wife is ahead of the child.
Yeah.
So why don't we have that same intensity with the wife? If the wife needs some teaching, she needs some more understanding, she needs some more time taken, some more patience, why don't we do the same thing with our wives that we do with our kids? And not putting them on the same level, because they're not, because the wife is ahead of the child.
And the wife is an adult. Should be.
And she's an adult. So if we have to teach her how to feed herself, listen, if we have to teach her how to feed herself, we got to teach her how to feed herself. If we got to show her over and over and over and over again, just like we do, we give our kids that same discipline, but we don't do it with our wives because we figure, just like he said, they're an adult. So, but don't knock off the fact that they're an adult, because just like you said, some women grew up in North Carolina. They don't lock their doors. We grew up in New York, some of us, we lock our doors. So we may have to drive that thing home. We may have to go buy some visual aids. We may have to do something, but it's our job to consistently have those patients with them and keep them on that level that they are. You know what I'm saying? Our helpers. And we have to keep them equipped to help us.
Good word.
If I said it right.
Mm-hmm.
Good word. Mm-hmm. That was great. That was
great.
The
only market risk with that is that you're gonna have a lot of defense walls you're gonna have to break down at the beginning of that, because first thing a woman is gonna say is, you're not my father, you're not gonna treat me like a child.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? And guess what? I'm glad you're saying that too. I'm glad you're saying that too. Because just like Andrew said, delivery is everything. If you're coming across like dad, you're going to get that flack. But if you're coming across like a concerned husband, that's like we in this thing together.
Wow.
Me and you in this thing together. If you fail, we fail. I fail. And failure is not an option. You understand what I'm saying?
But to have the patience that we have, that we're in there forever, takes that.
Forever.
But to have patience that, okay, whatever it is, this is what be, and you know what? Teach you 100 times, I'm going to do it.
100 times.
And y'all are just rolling right. The good words, fellas. Good words, Andrew, Tony, Patrice, Peyton. Well, it is that time. I've been holding it all evening. I got the big joker. And I want to just tie this thing up, 10:35, because talking about keeping score. Now, y'all know I love the dictionary, and I spent a lot of time in the dictionary this week, and I looked up the definition of score. And score, by definition, means the numerical record of points made by competitors or opponents in a game or match. And the key words there, brothers, is competitors or opponents. A competitor, by definition, is a person that competes or a rival. An opponent, by definition, is a person who is an opposing side in a game or a contest, an adversary. A competitor emphasizes the action in striving against one another. And an adversary, by definition, is a person that opposes or attacks, an enemy, a foe. A formidable adversary is an enemy who fights determinedly, continuously, and relentlessly. Now, I want to ask y'all, who is the real adversary, the real enemy, the real foe?
Is it your wife? Nope.
So while, you know, we talk about keeping the score, I just gave y'all the definition. When you keep score, it's all about an opponent, a competitor, a rival, an adversary. Your wife is not your rival. She's your ally. Y'all should be on the same team wearing the same jersey. This ain't the Colts versus the Saints, fellas.
Preach.
Y'all on the same team.
But here's the thing, though. The thing is this. If you're not with me, then you against me.
That means you got to be against me.
I mean, I, because here's the thing. If we've talked about it, if we work through things, if we, I mean, because that's going back to what I've said many, many calls before. I don't know if there's an internship for what goes into a marriage, coming from the women's perspective. Because I just think that, you know, we someone said in this call, they get to the day, and the day happens, and then after that, it's kind of like maybe, oh, I can coast a little bit, or, oh, you know, got him, you know, or whatever. But what happens is that if you're not with me, then you might be against me because I need your help.
Brother, that's what the whole setup is. The devil wants you to think that your wife is your enemy. And he's got you. He's like, I mean, if you're thinking that, well, y'all are supposed to be on the same team, wearing the same jersey, and you're pondering that she's your enemy, that she's against you.
Well, this is the thing. And you're right. It is heavy. But this is the thing. I know for a fact, and I'm not stupid, that she's not the enemy. The point that comes in and that I made earlier is I just don't know if she's going to show up. She's on my team. Could you imagine? We the Colts, we running out on the field. Where's Peyton Manning? Where's Peyton Manning? Is he going to show up today? I mean, you know, oh, we the Saints running on the field. Where's Drew Brees? Who's the backup? I don't know. But is Drew showing up today? I mean, that is, it doesn't mean that you're against me, but you definitely aren't helping to position us to win the game. If I don't know when you're going to show up. So I know that she's not the enemy. I got it. She's not. And I understand that when these things happen, you're trying to sleep in there and create doubt. I get it. But the fact of it is that if you don't show up, if I don't know if you're going to show up.
Can you give me an example of how she's not showing up?
Going back to.
This is another caller. Do you have an example of how she's not showing up?
Yes. I said at the beginning when I first got on, you know, there's times that I come home.
I just came in.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Welcome
to the call. I said early on the call there are times where I'm expecting, or I come home and I'm thinking my house is locked and I can just walk in.
or there's times that I've expressed different things. Like we had a family member whose house burned down because their dryer vent was not properly clean, and they left their house with the dryer and house burned down. So we had a conversation about, hey, let's not leave the dryer going because we saw what happened to Nikki. We don't want this to happen to us, blah, blah, blah. And I've come home multiple times, and she's gone, and the dryer's on. You know, there's been things like that where, you know, ultimately I'm saying, well, wait a minute. If you're not with me, what's going on? I need your help. Help me. You know, and it's these things, and they're not small. I gave some small examples early in the call about, you know, not putting things away, not hanging up a coat, not doing this. But there's bigger examples like this with the house being unlocked, and we have children, and I might walk all the way in the house at 9:30 at night, and you all the way upstairs, and the door is wide open.
But the whole thing, brother, is can she be in the middle? I mean, I think that either she's with you or she's against you.
Hey, let the gentleman respond to his question.
If I was on your basketball team, and if I showed up, and if you said, bruh, you didn't box out, bruh, you missed your free throw. Look, man, you gonna have to be better about your assists. If you start looking at what I didn't do in the game, then it might prevent you from recognizing my contribution in the game. I'm a firm believer that you find what you look for. You know, if you seek, you shall find. So I believe that if you look for her didn't do list, you'll find what she didn't do. I mean, everybody has a he didn't do list. I have one, you have one. So the thing that I think will help is if you say, okay, that's what she didn't do. Now I'm gonna take the same effort just to look at the smallest minute thing that my wife did do. What did she do today? And it could be small, it could be minute. You know, she left the dryer on, but she washed clothes. And she put them in the dryer. But you got a lot of brothers that are saying, my wife ain't doing jack. I mean, you see what I'm saying?
Can I throw in devil's advocate right quick?
Okay, go ahead.
You brought in my sport when you said basketball. So as the head of household, you're the coach. And when you're looking at
well,
that tape.
I was sticking with the analogy where you were saying we wear the same jersey. You on my team, but you're not showing up. So
yes.
I was looking at it. That's a teammate versus – I mean, that's a team – like, we, the whole thing – you're not competitors. You're on the same team. So right. I can see, you know, it's kind of like a Kobe Shaq thing. It's like, man, y'all got the potential to be legendary, but y'all can't get along. Y'all can't get past your differences. You all having this beef between one another versus seeing the strength that you all both bring to the team and the contributions that you all both make. So
right.
The whole coach scenario, I would say God is the coach. So
yeah.
God has given us instruction on how to run plays, and he says, you know, our instruction from God is that we love her. So it's like, what is love? Well, love is patient. You know, love is kind. Love is not puffed up. Doesn't seek
attention. Say that.
That practicing is what makes our relationships better. So sometimes, you know, you don't want to bring out the flaws every week. You don't want to say, hey, you know, you missed your free throws this game when I know you're at 85%. You know, what happened? You might have been a little sick that day. You just might have had too much on your mind. That brings up just other conversations that, you know, in the relationship, it's like, hey, is everything all right? You know, you forgot to close the door type of thing. We're talking about, you know, you just turning the ball over every time you touch it.
But that's why I'm asking for examples of I guarantee you any example that you give.
But see, I can give you a good example. I'll give you one.
Okay.
Like, I used to wash the clothes at the house, but I got more busy with my job, so my wife has taken over that role. Okay?
Right.
And she does a great job making sure all the clothes is washed. But my wife will tell you, it drives her crazy to sit there and fold all the clothes all the time. So you may have clean clothes sitting on the table. You might just have to go down there later on to fold them up yourself, or she'll fold them up. You just won't have time to put them away. You know, put them away.
Right.
So, you know, my washing machine is in the basement. So you just have to go down there in the morning, just go down there, pick you up some clothes, and then go up all the way back up to the third level, which is the top level. To act. So, you know, you got an extra prepping and stuff. Well, you're going to be like, well, if you wash them, fold them, and then put them up, I'm cool with you washing the clothes. I'm cool with you folding. I'm just not cool waking up 5 in the morning, got to go down in the cold. So, get some clothes.
Let me ask you something.
Hey, brother, before you ask that, could you come closer to the phone? Or, you know, I want to make sure the brothers can hear you because you sort of sound at a distance. I don't know if you're on a Bluetooth or speaker or
is that better?
We can barely hear you. Yeah, that's much better. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me ask this. You said you used to do the laundry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, again, it's like being the leader or being a head. This is what happens in corporations all the time. People will get a new responsibility, and basically the way they'll get it is they'll get hired. They say, welcome to your new job. They'll sit them down at your desk, and they'll say, go to work. And there's been no training. There's been no transition. There's been no duplicating of the previous employer to empower that new employee. And then instead of them being properly trained, they tend to be criticized for not performing their tasks adequately. And then, in turn, they become discouraged. They don't feel good about what they're doing. They don't feel supported in it. And they, in all honesty, it's kind of overwhelming because they're not aware of their responsibilities in the first place. Now, the whole laundry thing was a problem in our household as well. And at a point in my marriage when I was a stay-at-home dad, it was very overwhelming for me to have to do laundry for 4 or 5 people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until I literally had 3 people
have to explain to me the best way to do laundry for a large family. Three different people, they don't know each other. I started asking, how can I get this laundry thing under control? And once I started learning from the people how to do it, like one huge problem that we had, we wash all our clothes at the same time. Then I had a friend explain to me, no, you have one hamper for each person. You have child number one, child number two, child number three have different hampers. Watch each child's clothes separately. Adjust the load size depending on the size of the load. And then you don't have to worry about separating clothes. Once you dry it, you know everybody who's clothes in that dryer. So when you fold them all, they go straight into that child's room, straight into their dresser. That was a revelation for me, you know. So right. Those small things as far as training are crucial. Another thing, you can't have too many clothes because that becomes overwhelming. If you have more clothes that can fit into the drawer or into the closet, then you have overflow, and that overflow becomes clutter. So then you have to minimize the clothes. You have to downsize. Loose socks. Here's another thing for socks. Get go to Staples. Get some what are the little clips you clip paper with? Not paper clips, but the little binder clips.
Yeah, a little binder clip.
Get the smallest size binder clips. When everybody takes their socks off at night, binder clip them together before they go in the hamper. Wash them with the binder clip on them, dry them with the binder clip on them. Guess what? You don't have to match socks after they come out of the dryer. Because
right,
that's a lot
of brothers out right there.
That's training. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the way that I'm, like the brother was saying earlier, we have to teach our sons. We also have to teach our wives. And see, the thing is that criticism and keeping score is discouraging. Educating is empowering. So the thing is, if she's doing laundry and that's on your team. The fact that
let me throw this monkey wrench in there. If the education is just always coming from one direction, isn't that just as demeaning and discouraging? Because this
as long as it's coming from the right direction, which it is.
No, if the right direction, if I got a positive tone, I'm not aggressive with it, and I'm just trying to explain something to you as being the head of household and your husband, because the whole concept in my mind with being a husband is I'm not out to get you. Going back to what Rodney read with the competition and competitive and all that, I'm not competing against you. We're not at battle or at war. I'm on your team. But if I'm the one that's always educating, even though it's positive and it's training you and it's leading you in the right direction, isn't that also counterproductive? Because essentially at some point you're going to say to yourself, well, what am I educating him on?
No. Because see, the thing is, if it's coming from a place of love, if it's literally coming from a place of love, and you see, here's the thing, us as men, every single man on this phone, and this might be a little graphic, so forgive me if it is, we have entered physically into our wives, okay? What you have to do is you have to enter spiritually into your wife. So the same way with passion, when you make love and you deposit into your wife a part of yourself that permanently becomes part of both of you all, you have to do the same thing spiritually. You have to say, okay, I know how to do this a certain way, and I have a vision, because that's what God equipped you with. I have a vision of how I know this will work. Now I have to, through love, share this vision with my wife. If you look at, I mean, you can look at any successful group of people. You can look through any doctrine that has stood this test of time, and you will notice that wisdom was always shared or imparted with another. It's impossible for the success of a previous lineage to continue to exist
if the previous lineage did not instill that wisdom and that knowledge into its future. So it's the same thing with your wife. Now, your wife can teach you a whole lot of things. Like my wife has taught me a whole lot of things. But before God for literally spiritually prepared her to teach me things, I literally had to humble myself before I was receptive to learn it. Like one thing that my wife taught me that I did not know I was very weak in, she taught me through the Word of God how to love, because I really didn't know how to love. Now, here's the thing. We think as men, love is, oh, you provide for her, you know, you don't yell at her, you don't mistreat her, you don't cheat on her. And that is love. That's your responsibility as a husband. But I've learned that to make a wife feel loved it takes some serious submission to Christ and humbling of oneself so that she feels it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a difference between us intending love versus her feeling love. Like if you come in the house and you say, oh man, there's lint in the laundry trap. She done left the dryer on again. Now, as a man, you're feeling like, boo, I love you. I don't want the house to burn down. I love us all. I don't want the house to burn down. Clean the lint out of the laundry trap. Okay? You love her. You love the family. But I can guarantee at the end of the interaction, she does not feel loved. So my wife has taught me that. The way to come in and make her feel love is, boo, kiss on cheek. Ooh, you're doing an awesome job on this laundry. I'm going to sit down with you after dinner. We're going to fold it together. I clean the lint trap out for you. I'm going to remind you with a kiss every day how important that is, because I don't want the house to burn down. She'll feel loved after that. It's a difference.
That's
the same.
So you're knocking on that emotional.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to tell. Like you said, what's she supposed to teach you?
Mm-hmm.
I get what you're saying, but I guess at some point I shouldn't have to set it up and sugarcoat it for some basic stuff. And
if she likes sugar, put sugar on it. That's what I'm trying to tell.
Well, she's gonna be a diabetic then. I can't keep it. That's ridiculous.
But bruh, that's
not
an
answer.
Bruh.
That's
the and that's what I said, that I went through the exact same thing. Because my masculinity and my strength and my pride prevented me from coming to a humble place where I could share love with her in a way where she could feel it. Because what they are. We're logical beings. You can tell me, Kenyatta, that's my name, by the way, Kenyatta, man, keep the lint out of the laundry trap. You're going to burn the house down. Oh, my bad, bro. I got you. You can say the same thing to a woman, and she feels hurt because of how you shared it with her. The sugar man, if you call it sugar coating, I guarantee you this. Change to Mr. Sugarcoater and you'll watch your marriage change. Because that's the only way you can change another person is first changing yourself. The logic that you have, she doesn't feel it. See, that's how women they have to feel love. That's your responsibility as a husband. To love your wife. And the more you love her, that's your responsibility. The more you love her, the more you get the submission and reverence that you want from her. And as the leader, if you take that first step, and if you turn criticism into kindness, and if you look for all the good that she does and minimize the bad, because from what I hear you saying about leaving the door unlocked and, you know, leaving clothes in the basement and the washing machine. Man, I've seen,
I got brothers who went through marriages where it's like, oh, what'd your wife do? She got a $30,000 credit card that I was unaware of, ran that joint up, and I didn't know nothing about it. When I found out about it, we got into a beef. I paid it off. She promised to never do it again. I got a bill collector calling me saying she did it again. That's somebody who's not on your team. And by the way, she didn't do laundry.
Wow.
She did not do laundry. Okay? So when I hear what you're saying about her, I'm saying, okay, you can look at her differently because she's doing a lot. And she would do more and feel better about it if you constantly sugarcoated everything she did right. I guarantee.
At what point does that, I get what you're saying, but at what point does the sugarcoating become condescending? Because I'm always talking with
you. Hey, can I answer that one?
Dude, it would feel like that to you because you're a man and that's not what you need.
Hey, Kiyota, let Tony get in there. Yeah, Tony, go ahead.
Yeah, I just, you know what, because.
But after a while, that would go away because she already knows how you feel about that. I mean, you might have to do it for a while. You might have to flip it again. Cause then
it's real simple. You see, he done made it as simple as possible. He broke it down in the simplest form. But what we're not hearing, what he's saying, right, is real simple. We ain't taking it back to the beginning of the courtship stage. See, in the courtship stage, there was nothing my wife could have done wrong. I don't care if she didn't wash my clothes. I wouldn't care because I had a sense of purpose. You feel what I'm saying? I had a sense of purpose. There was nothing she could have done wrong because I knew what I wanted, what I had to have from this woman. You sense? But now that we married, I done flipped it. Now I got to you doing this and you doing that. No. We have to take it back to the they can do no wrong stage and act like that they really have something that we want. You see what I'm saying? Like the courtship stage. Like they have that, like they have something, like I said, that we want. Now, because they still have it, but we act like we don't need it because we can make them feel less than by some of the things that we say. We would have never played that mess in the beginning. So we shouldn't get brand new. Take it back to the beginning, huh?
You know Peyton ain't going to feel that now. They can do no wrong.
And I like what Tony... Oh, go ahead.
But listen. There was a time, listen, right or wrong, there was a time that our wives that we're married to right now, there was a time that they could do no wrong. Am I right or wrong, gentlemen?
You're absolutely right.
I mean, just somebody admit that. There was no time.
You're absolutely right, and then the question becomes then, well, how do you go back there? And I think the proper response to that is, as the brother was talking about, his wife was treating or had to teach him love, and I think it was the same brother also who quoted some of 1 Corinthians 13. And the one part I didn't hear, I was waiting for him to say, is that love keeps no record of wrong.
That's how you
go back there. When you don't keep record of it, then you're not reminding yourself or her that she's a mess or that she makes mistakes. Or so you keep it fresh that way and saying, I'm not going to keep a record of wrong, therefore you can do no wrong.
You can do
because
enough.
As far
Thank
as I'm concerned, you haven't done any up to this point.
Thank you. And that's how simple it can be. We got to go back there. And the also question is, how did we get here from there?
Right.
How did we get to this place from that place?
But see, part of what you were saying about the wife doing no wrong when you first met her, the other thing to that is when you first meet somebody.
Well, not first meet, but the courtship stage.
We know that she's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even through the courtship stage, you haven't gotten to that process where you transition that me into a we.
Yeah.
And when you start going through, when you marry someone, you move in with them, you live with them every day, and that familiarity starts to breed in contempt, you have to get through that transition. I've been saying lately that I think marriage is much like, it's like a pregnancy. You know, when you first get together, the conception part is real pleasurable, and then once
once that egg and that sperm cell combine, it causes side effects in that mother. It causes morning sickness, discomfort, weight gain, and all marriages seem to go through similar transitions,
sure.
similar problems and issues. And that's just a process of converting those me's into a we. So you have to learn. And then I think God personally gave us, he gave us the most challenging aspects of the nature of both male and female. It's very challenging for men to love.
Go ahead. I think it's important, though, you finish your analogy.
Well,
of that pregnancy, because you said, you know, at first, you know, you get in, you it feels good, it is good or whatever, and then you, once she's pregnant, then she's going through morning sicknesses or, you know, we're going through, really, because it can get miserable for both of us.
Right. But what happens is, like, divorce is a miscarriage. But if you
okay.
stay in there and if you stay in there and you let that mature and develop, and you let those, if each member change, because like I was saying, and it's relative, like it's hard for, the hardest thing it is for a man to do is love, and the hardest thing for a woman to do is submit. So if you both do what God tells you to do, you'll get what you want from the other person. That's why I said my wife, her presence in my life has taught me how to love. She's also taught me what love is, because I've never had someone love me as much as she does. So, and I never really understood it, still learning it. But our marriage is maturing because I realize that the things we've gone through have empowered change in both of us. You know, I had to change before she changed. And the thing that I did, and I decided to change first. So, and the thing that I decided to do was to do what the word said, which was to love her and to try and communicate with her in ways that made her feel loved, you know. And criticizing definitely didn't do it. Logic and lecturing definitely didn't do it. It was kisses and kind words. That's what did it.
I think you're absolutely on the right track, and I was hoping that you would go all through the steps of pregnancy, but for the sake of time, I would say that the end of it is greater than the former. The latter is greater than the former.
Oh, yeah, what you give birth
although,
to. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and that sex phase or whatever, that enjoyable moment or whatever, it's just that. It's a moment.
Yeah,
but the joy that comes out of it is a lifetime, and to go take it a little further and get some scriptural base on that, it says the suffering of this present time is not to be compared to the joy that shall be revealed in us.
Right.
Mm. Right. So yeah, we have to suffer a little bit in marriage. And like I said, everyone can probably attest to the morning sickness or the stretching or the, you know, or the this or the that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of it, even within the labor pains and stuff like that, you know, but at the end of it, it speaks volumes about what we've been through. None of that really matters at that point.
Add on to that, too, that, you know, that literally what you're talking about is so, I mean, this is heavy, talking about how marriage is like a pregnancy, because when you do go through those last bit of labor pain, that's the most difficult time. If you ever been in there with your wife, right before the baby is born. But like you just said, once the baby comes out, you forget, you know, all the morning sickness and those times that she chewed you out and she left the door unlocked. I mean, all of that goes out the window when you had this beautiful baby in your arms. I mean, it just is gone. You don't even remember it anymore.
Yep.
Right.
So,
yeah, not if you was in that delivery room.
Yeah, I've been there, bro.
There's some things you're just not going to forget, brother, let me tell you.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Good words,
right.
Fellas, good words. And we're going to roll this thing into open mic. I'm a great call, fellas, great show. Appreciate all the input. And, you know, I want to just close this up, get some closing comments, then we'll roll into open mic since it's a little bit after 10. But, you know, I just want to close this up by saying that, you know, what happens when we keep score? each partner keeps score, and if they feel that they've not received their quote-unquote fair share, they then become resentful, and they're not helpful, and that's what we're talking about, you know, just being a helpmate when their partner is having a difficult time. And for me, you know, a relationship is about honoring who I am and who my wife is. You know, I want to uplift her in any way that I can be, you know, and that can be emotionally, physically, psychologically, that's a long word, spiritually.
Psychologically.
Psychologically. But notice I'm not talking about rescuing, but, you know, talking about assisting where she truly needs support and comfort. You know, that's what the brother's talking about, you know, rather than criticizing, giving the kisses and the kindness. But it's not easy to change patterns in your relationships, but it is possible. You know, that's the thing. It's not easy. It's easier said than done. I think one brother said that earlier. But it is possible. And when both are willing to make the effort, wonderful things can happen. But as the brother just said, which was so important, is that he said he took the first step. He made the change.
Right.
And his wife followed. He learned how to love through his wife, you know, her responding to him. And he made the first step and got out there. And his wife followed, because that's what head of households do. We got to step out first so our wives will follow. And what he just said that they struggle with is the whole submission piece. So, you know, when you step out there and you learn how to love them and to treat them right, you know, they don't have anything else but to submit. You know, so I'll just leave it at that. Anybody else want to close it up?
I mean,
anything?
I like to say that. I mean, that's what Christ did. He laid down his life for us. You know, and he didn't want to go up there on that cross. He's like, Dad, if you can take this cup from me, please take it. You know, but not my will, but your will. So God's will is that we love our wives. So that's a valuable lesson that I think he wants us to learn. So if we have to carry our cross, and we got to stop lecturing and start sugarcoating, then we just got to put sugar on everything. If she liked the way it tastes, then we're learning a lot about love.
Right.
Say that. Good words.
I would just say that piggybacking on some things that we said earlier is that we're not opponents.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the same team. So I can't win unless we win. She can't win unless we win. And so I'm throwing that out there because keeping score, when we talk about keeping score, if I'm keeping score, the only purpose, I can make up all kind of excuses on why I'm doing it, but at the end of the day, the root of me keeping score is really just to see who wins. That's the whole point of keeping score. If you're a scorekeeper watching at a basketball game, a scorekeeper at a football game or a baseball game or whatever, you're keeping the score just to see who's going to win the game. That's really your only purpose. And so in doing that, if I'm keeping score, I'm really keeping score, really trying to favor myself to see if I'm going to win, if I'm going to get my fair shake or what have you. And we can't go in, we can't be in that relationship that way, because the truth of the matter is if I win, then the marriage doesn't win, because both of us have to win. Both of us have to get out of this marriage what we desire. And if we're not getting that, then neither one of us are going to win. You know, there's no fury like a woman scorned, right? So we can't continue to say, well, you know, you did this and you did that and you didn't do this and you didn't do that, because no one's going to win in that. At the end of the day, if you think you wasn't getting nothing now, you know you won't be getting nothing forward. So. No one wins unless we all win.
Yeah, good words, Rodney. Anybody else?
Good words.
Oh, hey, no problem.
Hey, we're good then. Thank you all, fellas. We're going to roll into the open mic. What the open mic is, for those new to the call, is, yes, we talked for 2 hours about keeping score, different, you know, aspects of that, and we just closed it up, put a button on that. So now's your opportunity. This is your time to shine. It's your opportunity to bring to the group. We have 8 people left, you know, right now, to put it out there. It's something that you're dealing with that's not necessarily pertaining to the topic that we talked about this evening, but anything you could ask the group. And again, you can get 8 perspectives free of charge. We're here for you, you know. So this is your time. You got anything on your heart, or something you're dealing with, something you want to get some perspective on? Now's your opportunity to open mic time. So have at it. Who's got something?
I got something.
Go ahead, brother.
I've been having a conversation lately, and I have my opinion on it, and I guess it's almost another topic, and it's simply this. Is love a feeling or a decision? Because a lot of people
wow.
think love is a feeling. I was having a conversation with a sister today, and she was telling me that she doesn't think she should make her, she shouldn't get married based on her, based on love, because to her, love is a feeling. And I was telling her, no, I don't think love is a feeling.
A decision.
But I think it's more of a decision. You decide to love someone. So,
based on a feeling? Can that decision be based on a feeling?
Yeah, it has to be. It has to be rooted in a feeling.
No, I don't think so.
So
and here's why.
Can it be
here's
both?
Why I say so.
Okay.
Well, here's why I say so. Christ instructed us to love our enemy. Okay, so you're supposed to love somebody who hates you, and then it makes you God-like, because God reigns. It reigns on us all. He blesses the just and the unjust. So to be like God, we have to love even our enemy. Now, we, you know, I as a man, I would pretty. I'm just assuming we as human beings do not feel like loving our enemy. We don't feel like it, but it's something that we've been instructed to do. So when we're confronted with that opportunity, it is our choice to decide whether or not to love our enemy. It's the same thing with, like we said about Christ. Christ didn't want to climb on the cross, but he decided to do it because it was God's will. So it wasn't a feeling, because feelings can take you away from love. You know, like we've been told to be patient and kind and not puffed up. Sometimes
yeah.
feel.
Right.
You know,
well, I agree with you, because it's a decision to be, because it's a decision really to make love your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And when you make that decision to accept Christ, because you can't really love outside of that. I know we probably have
yeah.
other things being said to us, or might even believe other things, but you can't really love, true love, outside of Christ. Feelings are conditional.
Right.
And the true love of God is unconditional.
Right.
And since feelings are conditional, love can't be, this is me,
right.
that love can't be a feeling. It has to be a decision, and the decision then becomes a lifestyle. So love is really based in Christ.
Right.
And a decision
now,
is to make a judgment.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, if you're eye for eye, tooth for tooth, then you might not come to that level of love. You know,
no, right, because you can't love.
You're gonna go based on how you feel. You know, like
right.
for instance, the civil rights movement in this country was rooted in within this very Christian theology with the nonviolent movement from MLK. I'm pretty sure he felt at many points like being violent, but he made it a conscious decision.
Everybody around him wanted to be violent.
Exactly.
And was being violent.
Right.
To be honest.
And the people
but he had
of the
to take
other
the higher young, road.
There you
mm-hmm.
go. And it was a decision. You know, it was a decision when they bombed his house not to take that gun. It was a decision to send those people home instead of sending them rioting. You know, so that's why I think love is a decision. I think that's why there's a lot of problems in relationships, because the status of people's relationships often change based on how they feel. So they fall in love, they get that early feeling, and then they start going through the process of transitioning from me into we, and in doing so, their feelings change. So then they think they're not in love anymore, because they base love on how they felt.
Yeah, but I think
I agree
with you. Decision, you know, what Rodney said is that I think the most important decision, you know, before you get into any type of marital relationship is that, you know, both parties have to be firmly rooted in God first.
Yeah, right.
So decision making. I mean, that's the first and ultimate decision. And if that decision is incorrect, then the relationship will not be successful.
Right. Well, let me ask you a question. Do you truly know how to love if you don't have a relationship with the Lord?
No. Absolutely not.
I don't think so. I know
God
I
is love. God is
so
love.
You may have a concept, but you don't have the right meaning of it.
No.
So everything prior to being saved is something else.
Yep.
Parents, kids, love, all that stuff is pretty much something else.
Yep.
I'm just
from
asking
my experience,
I mean that's the honest answer. Yeah, I mean
that's why the divorce rate's where it is.
That's why they always say, you know, good people going to be in hell too. You know, because it's all about the decisions, and it's a lot of good people that don't know God. I mean, let's be real. You know, so, I mean, but the whole thing is that, you know, that's what it's like. That's the ultimate. You know, that's the bar that we all striving to, you know, to reach or whatever. So we all on the same page as far as that's concerned. So,
I mean, it's grown man's business to learn to love your enemies.
Right, yeah.
Just like that's grown man business right there.
Yeah,
that's not for everybody.
It's very hard to love your enemies because the first thing, you know, a man wants to do is get rid of his enemies. Yeah.
Exactly. That's something that you have to graduate to. That's a place that you have to strive to be.
Right. We grew up fighting all our lives.
Yeah.
You know, fighting away our enemies.
Yep.
Sometimes with the hands, with the feet, whatever. Utensil you can have in your hand at that time.
Right. Most of the stuff that we do, say, in this Christian walk, those who are on the call who are of the Christian faith, that if you, the stuff that we do, a very high percentage of it is based on our decision. In other words, I'm saying that if you were going to Bible study or you go to Sunday service, there's been times where you didn't, quote unquote, feel like going.
Mm-hmm.
You're just tired. You didn't feel good. Your stomach or what have you. Maybe you and your spouse had just had some issues that morning.
But you decided.
But you had you made a decision to go to that service or that Bible study or what have you. Now let me ask the group a question. That if love isn't based on feeling, is it possible to feel love?
Wow.
Yeah, I definitely think that it's definitely possossible to feel love.
God is love.
And I think that's why. And again, I think that's. Is it echo? Is that my voice?
No, you good.
I think that's why again we've been given so much instruction, and we've been given a wonderful example in Christ, because we wouldn't be on this phone if we didn't feel that he loved us, you know, and the feeling that the world has received from his sacrifice, you know, for people to really, to understand that Jesus laid down his life and he took extreme pain and punishment that we deserved so that we might have eternal life by deciding to believe in him, because it's that belief that saves us. Also, I think the only true way that we can show our love to God so that he feels love from us is for us to submit to his will. You know, it's one thing to know the word and not live it. I think that's insulting to God. You know,
you'd rather you not know it.
Right. Than know it and disobey it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that's the only true way that we can make him feel love is to obey his commandments. Go ahead.
And I want to hear from some of the other brothers if they want to add to it. But so what I'm hearing is that it's, and this isn't right or wrong, I'm just put it out there, is that love isn't a feeling, but it can be felt.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
This is so
how about this scenario right here? Do you believe that when you have a child, and when the child is born, do you decide to love the child, or do you automatically love the child?
You decide to love them.
You got people abort babies every day.
Absolutely.
It's a different decision. You got people put babies up for adoption every day.
You don't automatically love a child. You decide to love that child. You see, you have to give children away because they can't handle it. You have people that abort children. So you decide to love that child. So you don't automatically love.
Yep.
Good point.
And let me say something else. I'm going to flip that question around again.
Okay. I want to hit a disagreement.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hold on to that, Tony.
And this could be just me. But that first time I heard that heartbeat, when you first go to the doctor and like, you want to hear the heartbeat, I was done.
That was just you.
I'm gonna tell you why.
And I'm gonna ask this question again.
Mm-hmm.
Can you truly feel loved? Okay. If it's not God's love.
No.
Can you truly feel love? Can you truly feel loved if
Absolutely
it's not,
not
that agape love?
Absolutely.
Well, here's the thing, and that's why I'm so confident that love is a decision because I have a lot of friends calling me with marital problems. I've had a lot of friends getting divorced lately, a lot of breakups and stuff like that. And I think the part of the problem is that the majority of the women who are finding men that aren't loving them the way that they want to be loved is because they are falling in love with men that make them feel like what they think is love.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like, for instance, you have women who fall into relationships with womanizers. They get in relationships with men who could really care less about them, but that man did or said something that made her feel like she was loved. I think those feelings are deceptive, and the reason that I think that they're deceptive is because of the true actions of the man eventually coming into realization and then destroying the woman's feelings. So the fact that she felt loved doesn't mean that she was loved. You can have a man who sincerely loves her based on the way God says he should love her, and she not be attracted to that man because that man did not know how to make her feel like she was loved. I think that if women chose their husbands based solely on the word, you know, like if they read, you know, the love requirements that we've discussed tonight, and if they looked for a man who had the qualities of Jesus Christ, they wouldn't fall prey to their own feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Because their feelings are often deceiving them.
Mm-hmm.
They feel, whatever they feel, and I think it's infatuation, but for some reason they feel like it's love. I've seen it happen to so many women.
And the one thing about it is that if you are dealing with a woman who, you know, tells you that, you know, that you're her everything, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a problem. And, you know, the whole thing about, you know, you talked about, you know, you have a lot of friends and everything that, you know, that have been divorced and are just falling apart around you. And that's the whole idea, you know, behind why we're on here tonight, is that we have this forum But you have to make the decision to get on. That's number one. That's the first step. You have to make the decision to get on, stay on, and then you have to make the decision to change.
Right.
And then all of that, you know, and the love and the, all of that stuff will follow. But you have to make the decision to pick up the phone, you know, get in a quiet spot, you know, put the kids away, or whatever you got to do. You have to make the decision to get on, and then the and then to look for some opportunities where you need to correct yourself. You know, that's the whole point of this thing. And if, you know, if we've got guys out there that can't even make the decision to dial the phone, or it's not that important, you know. And I'm not talking about, you know, we always talk about don't wait until, you know, you in divorce court and then you want to go get some help. Do the preventive stuff. But you got to make that decision first to say, you know.
Let's talk about the love part. Let's talk about the love part.
Mm-hmm.
Because the love question that I have, because right now, if I'm getting the right answer, the word love is being used entirely too loosely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right.
Entirely
absolutely.
Too loosely, because if you can't love me like the Lord loved me, then you don't love me.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why
I mean, is it safe to say that? Because it's not unconditional. There's no obedience to it. You see what I'm saying? So, and you're of the flesh.
That's right.
Right. Right. You have the different types of love that we know today that we hear about anyway from philosophers like Plato and Aristotle, who talk on love being one saying love is just a passionate or a sensual desire or sexual act. And then you got someone else saying, well, it's just a friendship. And that's, you know, you can love that way. But of course, we're understanding it as agape. It's godly love, because that's
godly
the only
love.
One we really accept and understand and believe, is that it's godly love that's an unconditional love no matter what. If I tell you once, Pastor likes to say it like this, she says, I love you. And then you might not never hear her say it again. And one individual had said to her, Pastor, you know I love you. I love the way, and she don't say it back. And he said to her, he says, you used to say, you know, you love me back, you know, like you say to everybody else, not from a sexual standpoint, but from a godly standpoint. And she said, well, if I told you once, what makes you think it's going to change?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she was trying to get across, that agape. That other stuff that they talk about from the world, that stuff is subject to change. You know, that sexual love or that friendship love, that stuff changes. You can look at it every day. You can look back in your own life and see that changes. The only thing that doesn't change, the same, the one who was, who is, and who is to come, that never changes. That's true love.
That's true love.
Mm-hmm.
And every, yeah, so.
So, I mean, can your feelings be loved, or can it be based on feelings? Then I guess in that sense, that all depends on where you stand.
Yeah.
If you stand in Christ, then it's an absolute no.
Even the word
if you're
of God.
In the world, then
well, I think that I think feelings are definitely related to love. I think that to love and to make somebody feel love, I think again are two different things. You can love someone and they not feel it. They get, because here's the thing, and especially in marriage. And again, I think this is a part of the maturing of marriage. The reason we're given instruction is because God knows what's best for us. So we have to first submit to Him. And once we submit to Him and obey His word, that's when we get what we want out of a relationship. See, men don't want love from our wives as much as we want respect and reverence from our wives, because submission to us makes us feel loved. Now, a contentious wife might have this emotion where I'll do anything for this man. I love him so much. He's the greatest man in the world, but she contends with her husband. So if she might have sincere feelings within her heart where she feels like, I love him, I want him. I love him. But if she doesn't submit to her husband, he won't feel loved. Okay? Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing with us. Well, we could love our wives, and we could feel like, I want to be supportive. supportive of her, and you know, I want to take care of her, and I want to, you know, I want to provide for her. But if we don't show her that love in a way in where she feels it, which means there's something we have to do with humbling ourselves. At least that's the process I went through. It's something we have to do within ourselves to make her feel loved. So I do think there are feelings involved, but I also think that we have to submit to God's will in order to do the right thing. I don't know if everybody else just came out and they knew how to treat their wife and make her feel loved. I was impatient. That's a continuous process.
That's always a learning process.
Like, I remember early on in our marriage, she would come to me crying about something. I'd be like, "You'll be all right." I literally said it, "You'll be all right." I just totally disregarded her feelings. She crying, "You'll be all right." You know, so it's like I was there. And it's like, and it's, like you said, it's still a process. You know, I would just totally ignore feelings. There's no validation at all because I didn't understand the feelings. And I didn't know how to make her feel like I loved her. Now, I love her more than anything, but she wasn't feeling like I loved her. So then I had to learn that. I had to go to God.
You had to sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
That ain't it. I was waiting for him to say it, and he said it. He had to go to God to learn that love.
Yeah.
Because I think that, because I was getting ready to ask you the question, because you did say that she introduced you. I thought you said that earlier.
She introduced me to what?
Introduced you to the Lord. Did you say that?
No. I'm Mr. Christian man.
Okay.
He said she taught him how to love.
She taught
him. Oh, okay. I got you. God used her as a vehicle to teach me.
You know, that's the thing. Another thing is, boy, you got to be real careful when you get self-righteous.
Yeah.
When you start getting in the Word and you're like, the Word says this, and you start preaching it.
Yeah.
And then you got that beam in your eye, and you're trying to take the mote out of somebody else's. And you got to look at yourself and say, hold up, let me do what I need to do. Let me live this thing. Let my life be my sermon. Let my walk be my sermon, not my lecture, but my life. And then you start working diligently to change you based on the Word. Oh, my goodness. I mean, for me, you know, that's when that lesson came, because I was so, I was into the Word, but the deeper things that it leads you to, I'm sorry, forgive me, guys. I'm just thinking back to how I was in the transition, and I'm telling you, it's, you know, like when we talk about the whole sugarcoating thing. The thing is, if I have a choice, like if I look at my kids, and if I have a choice of putting sugar or salt in their oatmeal, and I know they're gonna like the way that sugar tastes better, you know, and if there's no harm from putting either in, and if I know they're gonna like sugar, then that would be a better choice, you know. It'll help it go down a lot easier. You know, they're both white, they both look alike, but one's going to make them feel better.
Different.
You know, mm-hmm. They taste different. So that's part of what I had to learn, because, you know, I used to have a big salt shaker. You know, I used to have a big salt shaker. And it took God helping me to see myself. I had to submit to him and his will, and I had to humble myself. I'll never forget, we had an argument. This is where it happened. This was the turning point. we had an argument, and I don't even know what it was about, but I was so enraged, I just flipped over an iron board. It was the iron board was in front of me. I just threw it up in the air. I stormed out, and then I went and I sat in the car, and I was venting and steaming in my own anger, you know. And I mean, it was like, you know, turn the ignition and pull off type anger. And then a voice just came to me, like a thought, and said, Jesus wouldn't have done that. Just like that. Jesus wouldn't have done that. And then here I am, Mr. Christian man. Jesus wouldn't have done that. You know, you should submit to me because the Bible said, no, Jesus would not have done that. So then when it dawned on me that Christ wouldn't have done that, it's like, well, what would Christ do? You know, what am I supposed to do? Where it says you're supposed to love your wife. Love. I said, well, how do you love her? You know, where's my instruction manual on how to love her? You know, not to make her love me, not to make her submit to me, but, you know, how do you love her? And that's when I went to Corinthians and I started reading what I was supposed to do. And it says, love is not easily angered. So when I read that, I was like, whoa, right, Jesus wouldn't have done it. Then I started looking, and it said, you're supposed to love your wife the same way Christ loved the church. I said, well, how does Christ love the church? He never flipped over. He flipped over some tables, but it wasn't at the church. You know, so then the more I learned about Christ, there's very few, if any, there was only one account that I can recall of Christ even becoming angry. Only one account.
That was that time right now, was like the synagogue or something like that, right?
Yeah, and he flipped over some, but it wasn't at the church. You know, it was because they were trying to violate the church. Yeah, they were trying to violate the church. They were trying to take it from being sacred. You know, so for me, you know, the whole lesson of love has been an extremely powerful one. I think that submission, God's will and His word, and humbling oneself is like a gateway to love. It's like a doorway, and it's not going to be easy. Like sometimes, like when I started to try to live love, I would just put it that way. When I started to try to live the word, I started to live Corinthians. It seemed like the aggression from my wife became more intense, tempting me to return to anger, tempting me to return to, you know, shelling up and being prideful and demanding my way, you know. But I resisted. It was a many a conversation where I'm tempted to be angry, and I just tell my wife, "Hey, you know, you're hurting me right now. And, you know, this conversation really hurts."
Two words. Anybody else got anything for open mic?
Yeah, I mean, I had one thing to say, but it was basically commenting on what he was talking about, you know. And
okay.
Even when, you know, in the Word of God, it talks about not awakening love before it's time. And when you awaken love before it's time, it's when you call yourself entering into a woman that is not your wife, okay, because the only time that God tells you to love outside of Him is you to love your wife, even Christ loved the church. So He specifically meant not awakening love before time, meaning that you shouldn't be in any other relationship that is contrary to His word other than your wife. That's where love enters in when it comes to the woman. And we've been taking it out of context for years.
Thanks for clearing that up, too.
Absolutely. But He said, love your wife.
Clearing
that up. Love the church. He says, don't awaken love before it's time. And the only time that you can awaken love is when it's your wife. Because He told you to love your wife.
even his wife loved the church. God, he loved the church. He died for it. So he wants you to be that little Christ to your wife. What he's trying to say.
New words.
That's it. Just want to comment.
I just want to take 2 seconds out, man, to thank you, brothers. You know what I mean? Because this is a powerful conversation that's just not going on. It's just not. I don't hear it until I get here. And I go a lot of places during the week. I see a lot of people. I keep a lot of company, not at home, but, you know, in the presence of people. And this conversation is just not going on. Even in church. Church, we go, we hear our sermon, even in Bible study. But this conversation right here is not going on. You know what I mean?
And this is in the marriage council.
Yeah, I mean, but this is what we need. This is what we need. The positive reinforcement, even just to let us know we're on the right path. You know what I'm saying? We're on the right path. The book that we're reading, we're all reading the same book. You know what I'm saying? So when somebody talks about it, we know exactly what they're talking about. And if they don't, we can go do some research and go look it up. You know what I'm saying? But this conversation is just not happening. And we need it enough as men. We need to know what God's instruction is for us to do this thing that we've done called marriage.
So can I ask a Marky Wrench in here? Can I throw one in there? I'm sorry. I don't want to stop this and get off the phone, but I got to ask this question. If we are right and we're on that right path and we know how to love our wife unconditionally, what happens when our wife is one step behind? Meaning?
She's the weaker vessel, man. It is what it is.
Absolutely.
We know that going in.
Right.
And if we didn't know that going in, we definitely know it now. So that's to be expected.
I mean, she holds on to that stress a little longer. She instead of passing those situations on to God and living by faith instead of by world demand.
Yeah, so I think somebody answered that question really earlier, Patrice, is that, you know, we're more logical and we don't really, we do get emotional, but I mean, it's not to the extent where we harbor things like women do. And a lot of that, as far as, you know, when you say, you know, we're, you know, striving for the goal, but our wives are maybe not there yet, is that, you know, I think it's all about forgiveness. And they have to really get over those past hurts, those past feelings of what you have done, you know, some mistakes that you have made, and you probably have apologized. But just because you've apologized and made it right doesn't mean that they're over it. And, you know, like I say, they you know, with us, it's like when my wife comes to apologize, I'm like, hey, we're good. You know, everything's good. I don't harbor that, you know, iniquity towards her, you know, to keep bringing it up or to keep feeling it. It's just like when she's apologized, it's over. But it doesn't work that way for them. And I think the conflict arises is that, you know, we, and that's with relationships, any relationship, friendship, marriage, the whole thing, the conflict arises is that when we think that they should act like us, that our wives should, you know, I think Peyton said it, you know, it's like, this is basic stuff. I mean, it's basic to him, you know. So, I mean, the thing is that the conflict arises when we think people who are not us, who have our, you know, who grew up in different worlds, you know, from our world, should respond to things exactly the same. And it's just like, why are you not responding this way? This is how I will respond. Why aren't you responding? So, I mean, that's where the conflict arises. But we have to realize that, you know, she didn't walk in your shoes. Or your best friend or whatever, they didn't walk in your shoes. So they're going to, by nature, respond to it differently. So I think we have to respect that and just, you know,
Can I ask you again to, like, expound on what your definition of her being behind is? What do you mean where I don't completely understand? Like, I need a
gap. I mean, I think maybe I can help him is that, you know, maybe what, and don't let me put words in your mouth, P-Town, but I think maybe is that he sees himself as striving, as improving, but maybe his wife is not there yet. Is that what you were saying, P-Town?
Yeah. There's situations where I see, you know, not on myself, but in the church where one of the spouses is just in a different, going in a different direction.
Yeah.
They're not on the same page, even though they're on the exact same walk. So how would you feel?
I mean, I guess I don't understand what it means by different direction. understand.
I think what he's trying to say is, well, how would you feel if she was waiting on you, you know, come to God, you know, and yet she dealt with you in your situation and how you were for years, regardless of how far you were behind. But as your wife, you know, she stood the test with you. Only to see when you receive Christ that you excelled and moved in front of her, because the word of God said that he's a God of order.
Well, see, the thing was, I mean, I had already received Christ. I had received Christ, and it wasn't until I had reached a certain lesson that I started to realize that, oh, this is where you're supposed to live the word, and this is how you live it, you know. The thing when my decision to change had very little to do, believe it or not, it had little to do with my wife's pace, because, you know, I decided that I was going to live the word's instruction as what I was supposed to be as a husband. And then in faith, watch God perform the miracle of transforming me and all around me, including my wife. Because I think, again, the key to changing someone else is to first change yourself.
You can't change anybody anyway.
Right. Only now that might seem, people. But that might seem like it's common sense, but it's a very deep concept, and it's very challenging for a lot of people. Where I think in every relationship, I think women think when they want to change their husband, they should complain. You know, they should complain, and they should tell him, they should confront him. That's the last thing you should do if you want to change your husband. If you want to change your husband, you should submit to him. I think us as men think that we want to change our wives. We typically want to do the same thing. I think that we're very equipped with, like I said earlier, logic and lectures. And I don't think that's the key to changing them. I think the key to changing a wife is really to change yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I think what we forget, fellas, is that probably for a time in our marriage, our wife was ahead of us, probably waited for years for you to bring your tail around. And she stayed right there, but now you've got all righteous and stuff, and she ain't following. It's like, well, where you at? You know, what are you doing? You know, it's like, hey, I waited on your butt 10 years, you know? So I think we got to, you know, just recognize that. And they're not going to come around. You know, they may take them 20 years. But, I mean, you still got to recognize that, you know, we might have been in different spots, and you know, we have to recognize that our wives might have been waiting on us, you know, to get it together. Now that we got it together, we're like, hey, you need to get it together. And it's like, wait a minute.
But the most difficult part for them is that when you do get it together, according to the word of God, okay, you're the priest of your home, so automatically when you dig deeper into the word and you excel, you move before her, and a lot of women have difficulty accepting that.
Yeah.
Because God is God of order. He said God is Father, Holy Spirit.
The phone broke up. You said that what happens when they have a problem with a phone
broke up? They have a problem with accepting the fact when you do accept Christ, and no matter how far you were behind, they couldn't move any further before you because you are the priest of the house. They can move forward in knowledge, but in position, the way God has called it, he's a God of order. So when you accepted Christ and then you moved into your rightful place, that's where they have difficulty when they see you starting to excel.
And they may have been complacent with you being behind.
That's right.
You know? And then when you get it together, it's like, wait a minute, I'm not prepared for this.
Exactly what I'm saying. Exactly.
Yeah, I feel you. I can feel you on that.
Yeah, because God is God of order. He calls you. He said, "This God the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, then man." And he said, "Then the woman is the weaker vessel." Am I correct?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he's a God of order, that's what's wrong. Order is not in the church. We got our women running the church when we as men are supposed to be in place, in position.
Mm-hmm.
You see, in position. And when we're not in position, they running things. And then when you come there and then you take your rightful place, then it's a problem.
Yeah.
Well, see the thing, and again, I guess for me, recognizing that I had a challenge of learning to love, I also recognize that it's a tremendous challenge for women to submit.
Of course,
it's a tremendous challenge for them, and the thing that I also learned, the worst person, I think, to give a woman her sermon on her need to submit is her husband. And she needs to hear it.
She needs to hear the sermon on submission, but she doesn't need to hear it from her husband because she'll feel that it's coming from a selfish location. She'll feel that he's trying to subjugate her. Right, control and subjugate her. It has to grow from a feeling of, you know what, this man really loves me, and first and foremost, I really love God, and this is what God told me to do. So forget what I feel, I'm going to submit to him because that's what God told me to do. Now, I don't think if a woman gets there in her heart, she'll have a problem following a righteous brother. Now, the thing that has to happen that, and see, the devil's not going to make it easy. Like you said, if she's the weaker vessel, then that means that you're going to have to carry the heavier load a little while longer. Have faith that God's going to bring her around. If she is the follower and you're the leader, then that means that you have to change first and stay committed to that walk while waiting for her to catch up. I mean, that's just part of leading. You know,
mm-hmm.
The thing about being a leader is mean you have to carry more. You know, you got to be out front. You got to live the Christ-like way first, and then have faith that God will heal everything. Because he's got to be looking for it, dog. You won't see the miracle if you don't. You know, God.
Put the work
God will, yeah, you got to let him get into it too.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he doesn't, because see, if you know, it's like, okay, God, I'm gonna do what you tell me to do. And then it's like, well, Lord, she ain't doing what you told her to do. Then that's when you got to start to say, well, you know what? So what? I'm going to love her anyway, and I'm going to keep doing what God told me to do.
Well, not only that. Not only that, but you have, it's our responsibility as the head also, especially a Christian head, is to introduce her to what God tells her to do. Because a lot of times we take it for granted. So we have to make sure that okay, here's what God says for you to do, and here's what God says for me to do, here's what God says for us to do. If we're not introducing that to her, then she'll never know. Then we can't get mad because we haven't done our job in creating the meeting. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's all about presentation.
And my wife. It's all about presentation.
And
knowledge
is
power.
You're very correct.
My wife introduced me to God. And because I wasn't a believer, man. You know, I wasn't a believer. I ain't believing God. You feel me? I'm just being honest.
His was deep. That means you all weren't equally yoked.
Exactly.
Which means the dude that you were, you aren't anymore.
Absolutely.
Which means the dude she fell in love with is not there anymore.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so now
The new you is going to have to create a new her.
Absolutely.
Because she didn't fall in love with you.
There you go.
She wasn't attracted. She might not even be attracted to Christ-like men originally.
Yeah. Well, she
because
was.
She totally. Say again.
I said she was actually, but you know.
When you all met, you did not follow Christ.
I knew she was
say
my
again.
Wife.
I knew she was your wife.
I knew it. But the thing about it, to this day,
she introduced me to God, and I wasn't a believer. And then I started going to church, and then I started, listening, and I started hearing things, and then my heart started to open up, and, we don't really talk about that, but to this day, like you said, it's not the same person, because to this day, I'm a minister now. You understand what I'm saying?
Let me ask you this. Were you all married before you became a believer?
No.
Okay, so you weren't married until after you became a believer.
After I became one, exactly.
Oh, okay. So you all were equally yoked. Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you like this. See, I'm going to give you a small analogy of my coming to Christ, man. I felt like I had a Samson and a Goliath experience, right? And I felt like Samson, he just took he slung the rock. And
David.
Hit me in the head, right?
You mean David, right?
Yeah, David. Then he hit me in the head with the rock, right? And theory says that if I hit you in the head, momentum automatically causes you to go back. Am I correct?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but when I got hit in the head, I fell forward. I had to praise him. I fell.
Wow.
See, everybody thinks about that. Goliath fell on his face.
Mm.
Momentum would have said, if I hit you in the head with something, you're naturally going to do what? You're going to go back.
Right.
Yeah. But I fell forward.
Mm.
And I started praising him, and I started loving him, and because I knew who he was, because I had that hit in the head experience.
Mm.
I just wanted to say this too, because this is how women feel. They're not logical. They feel. And it's good that you're doing. It's great that you're doing what you're doing, because you come to love God more than her.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Wholehearted.
But I'm telling you, I think there might be a side of her that feels less love because you chose a love greater than her.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? That's how women feel.
Absolutely.
And it's not. Wow. And she won't justify. She probably don't even want to feel that way because she knows it's wrong. But that's
you
how
know
they
what?
Feel.
Who's that? Is Kenyatta that you?
Yeah, that's Kenyatta.
You just walked into my topic for next week.
What's that? What is your topic for next week?
Why is my spouse so jealous of me?
Huh?
You trying to get us shut down?
I know, right?
You want to drama?
I don't know nothing about that.
What are you talking about? It's your 81 on your topic list.
Oh. Oh, man. We have to talk about that offline. We have to talk about that online.
There is some type of jealousy. And the funny thing is, I swear to y'all not, the other night, my wife, we were in bed, and she said, you know what? I'm jealous of you right now.
Wow.
Yep. Wow.
Due to the fact that I'm doing all these things, and we talked about it, and I know I have to do it.
How you going to talk about next week's topic right now?
This is week.
That's next week. It's your week
now. That's next week, Tom. It's my week.
Well, me and Tony going to be silent.
Wow. I'm going to hold off on it, but half of those topics is, that is one. That's one of them. Your walk has, you're not the same person I married a long time ago. You're doing a different walk. You're on a different
Let me ask you this. I don't know who said the thing about their wife It's like you try earnestly to do the right thing and walk the right way, and she's not on the same pace, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing things? And let me just ask, are you doing things like studying the word all the time? Hello.
Read more.
Yeah. Okay. Like
yeah.
Reading. Are you on a computer doing research about it?
No, I'm doing other things. I'm working with kids in the church. I'm doing, you know, basketball practice. I'm doing all these other things to help others.
Okay. That's powerful. Okay. How has it changed the amount of time you spend with her?
Due to the fact how her schedule has changed based on her job schedule. It's not Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. It's one night a week.
But how has your new found interest in displaying your Christian walk change the amount of time that you spend with her?
I see where he's getting at.
Mhm. It changed a lot, man. I ain't gonna front.
How?
He's right. He's driving right down your street, Patrice. He's right on.
Oh yeah.
He get ready to knock on your door. He get ready to knock right on your door. Bring your door.
I don't need nobody knocking on my door at 12 o'clock at night.
Yeah. He's
now,
keying in right
I'm,
now.
And
the door is unlocked.
Run around the clock.
He got the door open. He got the
door
open.
Door open. Yeah,
he's ready
taking
to
his shoes
right
off.
In.
Yeah.
Now, you know, the thing is, and I'm pretty sure every single man that God calls has to give less time to his spouse and children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just part of it, you know. I think it takes a very strong woman to be married to a minister. You know, it's midnight and you're in church, in a very powerful ministry. You know, and I don't think it's that she's necessarily jealous of you. I think that might be how she worded it. I think she might miss you.
Mm.
I think she might want, and this is how women feel. Now, how they think is how they feel. She wants the same type of love that you give to those kids and that you give
mm-hmm.
to the ministry, the same type of conviction and passion that you have for it. She wants you to feel that way towards her.
Now, he's sitting on your couch, Patrice.
I don't know.
He's in your house drinking your orange juice right now, sitting on your couch.
Popping popcorn in there.
But I'm going to tell you, I don't even know if that's fair or if it's right. I don't know if it's
right.
Fair or if it's right. I know that God is a jealous God, and I know that, again, you've been called to love, she's been called to submit, but I think that dialogue can definitely be created. You all need to talk about those feelings, and I also, and I'm not trying to lecture. I also know that if you just are mindful of how she feels, and if you do the smallest thing to fit her in, to make her feel that you think of her as much as you think of those kids that you're helping. Because what she sees is she sees you're capable of it. She
mm-hmm.
sees you're capable of this tremendous sacrifice. She sees you capable of fitting so many things into your schedule. She sees you capable of reaching out to so many people. And I think what we tend to do, and I'm guilty of it too, what we tend to do is while we're trying so busy to help others, we don't take out time to make that same investment next to that wonderful person who God blessed us with.
Yeah, my mother used to say all the time, charity starts at home.
Yeah, so
mm-hmm.
I think that if you do, like, in your schedule, and don't tell her, you schedule in a date night. that fits into your schedule, and you commit to that date night with her the same way you commit to everything on your schedule. Same way you commit to everything on your schedule. Just surprise her. Well, I'm going to take her out to eat, you know, just this small stuff. Just, and I think that'll make her feel, because, again, it's like logically, it's like this was a dude who was in the world, and then I introduced him to the Word, and then he embraced God and the Word so much he went on to become a minister, and he's such a compassionate, strong, loving man that he's gone out to the community to try to help the world, and he's created this online ministry that's powerful and is impacting people's lives, and he's doing all these wonderful things. Logically, boom, I feel you. I see all of that. But her emotions are saying, you know what, we used to spend a lot more time together. Now he don't have time for me. He got time for everybody else.
Yep.
He don't have no time for me.
But then, doesn't the family come before the church?
Of course.
You need...
Well, like I said, those lessons in love that we are giving wives for, because, see, that's what I'm saying. God made us different for that very reason. So they can learn from us, and so we can learn from them. If the thing is helping kids with basketball, that's great. That's coming from a heart of compassion. But that true emotion of loving someone is a deep thing. Having a wife that feels love. See, that's another thing, like logic love versus making your wife feel, literally feel loved. It's a different thing. And when you commit to learn how to do it, like I'm lecturing Patrice, but I just got the whole cry session just last week because my wife kept hinting that she wanted to go out to the movies, and I kept blowing it off like, let's play it by ear. And she had a meltdown.
Yep.
And I'm sitting there like, what? What just happened?
Yeah, that doesn't work.
And she's melting down. And I'm like, what? And she broke down and just, and she literally started just saying, please take me to the movies.
Mm.
Will you take me to the movies? In the middle of an argument, she starts crying and bawling, please take me to the movies. Please, can you just take me to the movies? Please. And it's like, okay, I'm dealing with all kinds of stuff. I'm dealing with the kids. I'm dealing with the renovations. I'm dealing with work. I'm dealing with all kinds of stuff. And I'm just thinking, like, oh, she's okay. You know, she's all right. I'm all right.
Well,
she's all right. No. You know, I'm doing great things. You know, she's supporting me. She didn't want to go to the movies.
But just think of how powerful it would have been, brother, if you, that first time she said she wanted to go to the movies, you made all the arrangements with the kids and you took her to the movies.
That's all she wanted.
Yep.
That's all she wanted.
That's the most important thing is not the quantity, but the quality is maximizing the time you do have. Because you can look at, especially when you're talking about ministry, you can look at it. I know some people personally who desire ministries like a T.D. Jakes or an Old Jones type ministry, and maybe they are desirable to some. I myself don't desire anything like that, and the reason being is because if you hear some of these guys talk, I heard Noel Jones one time talk about how he's on the road, he's in and out of hotels and airplanes, and he might be in four or five different preaching engagements in four or five different cities in two or three different countries in a week.
Yeah, that's burnout based.
Yeah, that's absolutely, and no surprise, he's divorced because he said, well, he doesn't talk bad about his ex-wife at all, but he says he's kind of guilty of not. He puts himself on the spotlight. Says I'm guilty of not devoting enough of my time to my family. In other words, he didn't maximize the time that he did have. He came home, maybe he was just tired. He went to sleep. And didn't spend the time. He didn't go into details. But then at the same time, on her side of the fence, she knew who she was marrying.
Mm-hmm.
But, he didn't take that as an excuse or to justify what he did. So, you know, I guess in its simplicity, you just have to maximize what you do have. Everybody's given the same 24 hours. It's how you use it. It really makes all the difference in the world. So a movie is 2 hours or whatever, and you can take that time out. You can go to the movie for 2 hours, even though you got a million other things to do. Should you take care of home first? Absolutely. Yeah. You got to take care of home first. You're the head of that. You're the head of that woman, according to scripture. And if you're the head of that woman and you're not around, then she's walking around with no head.
Yep. And another thing that's deep to me is like when word says somewhere it says that a man's father can give him riches, but a good wife is a gift from God.
Yeah.
So if God gifted you with something, you know, like imagine if like for instance we're supposed to reverence. The wife is supposed to reverence her husband the same way as she would Christ. Now, imagine this gift from God. Imagine, let's go deep like this. Imagine that your wife was God's daughter. Because it's a gift to you. So, how would you treat God's daughter if he gave her to you? Would you treat her like, you know, you'll be there when I get back? Or would you know that daddy's looking at how you're treating his daughter and be mindful of how you treat her? Because tremendous blessings come through the wife, man.
Man, say that. Let's just say, how would you treat the wife that God gave you?
Yeah.
Because that really, that's what it is. That's how I view my wife, is that,
right.
And I know he did. Because nobody knew what I wanted but him. And he gave me what I wanted. I mean, down to the T.
I remember my prayers that God, I don't know. I kept asking for these type of women when I was in the world. He kept giving them to me. And it kept falling. It just kept faltering because it was what I wanted. I said, God, you know what? I tried to do things my way my whole life, and I've been miserable. Everything I asked for, you gave me, and I've been miserable. I said, you know what? Forget what I want. Give me what you want for me. And I have faith.
Can I throw a monkey wrench in that one?
Yeah.
Can I? For a few seconds?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Quickly.
So, quickly. So, if that's the case, if God gave you a wife, why is it in the Word that he says that when a man finds a wife, he finds a good thing, highly favored of the Lord? Because what happened was Adam and Eve, he took Eve from Adam's rib. And he gave his wife, and then when he gave him the wife, you know, and then they sinned, and he said it was the woman that you gave me.
Mm-hmm.
And then right after that happened, you know, so he became an accuser of God. So after
right.
that, he said, well, when a man finds a wife, he finds a good thing, highly favored of the Lord. So are we to wait for God to send us a wife, or when the man finds a wife, he finds a good thing? So is it
well, put it like this, and maybe it was because. Maybe it was because I didn't know what qualities made a virtuous wife.
Right.
You know, maybe that's what it was. But
okay.
The things that I was asking for did not equate good wife material.
Okay. Gotcha.
You know, the things that I asked for, I feel like he gave me so that I could learn that that's vain. You know,
it,
like.
He found the wife, he found a good thing because you knew what that virtuous woman was, right?
Right. So he knew, like, it, for instance, like when I was dating, right around the same time I met my wife, is very modest. And I thought women were supposed to be extravagant with the makeup and the nails and the perm and the designer clothes. I thought that's what women are supposed to look like.
So that's
the type of women I was attracted to. You know, but then when I read in the Word that it's not about the painting of the hands and the face or the braiding of the hairs, I forgot the rest of the passage, but when I read it, you know, and when I read, like, a woman who loves God receives favor from the Lord, where it says beauty is deceit and favor is deceit and beauty is vain and things like that. When I started reading those type of things, I was like, whoa, that's what I thought was valuable. But the Word is saying that it's valueless. So I realized that my taste at that time was of the world, and I stopped depending on my taste and my desires. and submitted my will to his. And it's like, look,
so your spirit,
you know,
the spirit of God.
You know, and then when I start realizing that these were the good traits of a woman, I recognized them in my current wife.
There you go.
I recognized them. I saw them. I said, oh, that's wife material.
Right.
But all the other stuff that I thought was, it wasn't.
Right.
And the fine in that, the play on the word fine in that passage is really talking about getting. So you get a hold of or attain. So if you get a wife, so not necessarily that you're seeking for it or chasing it, when you get a wife, you get a good thing.
Here's another thing that I found to be factual in my life experience, since we're talking about fine too. I guess God had to change what I saw or what I appreciated in women because I've learned that you find what you look for. Without doubt, you find what you look for. So if you're looking for an expensive, extravagant wife, if you're looking for that, oh, you'll find it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for a modest, submissive, supportive wife, if you know to look for that, then you'll find it.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, if you submit to the word and you read it so you know what good qualities make a wife, then when you look for those things, you'll find it. Unfortunately, most people who look for wives here, they're not looking for her to be, they're not looking for her most important qualities to be, first and foremost, she's in submission to Christ. Because if she's not in submission to Christ, she ain't going to be submissive to me, because that's her instruction.
Let me throw a monkey wrench in here, not to cut you off, but...
It's okay.
Yeah, it's past my bedtime. I'm going to shut this thing down. Yeah, it's 12:20, brother. You know,
yep.
Brother got to go to work tomorrow. And, good chat. You know, we got to cut this thing off at some point. So we appreciate the conversation. Welcome to the new callers that were on. You know, great call with the Are You Keeping School. We hope you got something out of it. And tune in next week. We're here every week, same time. Tuesday evenings from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time with the open mic thereafter. So, again, we appreciate y'all. And please join us again next Tuesday. God bless y'all. Y'all be safe.
God bless.
And have a wonderful week.
Hey.
All right, y'all be easy.
All right, man.
All right, later.
Later.